Have you seen the price of gold lately? It's hitting all-time highs. And when it comes to investing in gold, check out Noble Gold Investments. They have a track record of excellence that's second to none. Just look at their thousands of five-star reviews on Trustpilot, Google, and the Better Business Bureau. Customers rave about their knowledgeable staff, smooth investment process, and life-changing results, which you can see for yourself online. That's the kind of reputation you can count on. But it's not just about the reviews. Noble Gold Investments truly care about their clients. They take the time to understand your unique needs and goals, and they give expert guidance every step of the way. That level of personalized service is rare in this industry. Look, when it comes to securing your financial future, you can't afford to take chances. Go with the gold company that has earned the trust of countless investors. Visit noblegoldinvestments.com/Tim Pool today and discover why Noble Gold Investments is the only choice for smart, secure gold investments. Or call them at 877-646-5347. Again, that's 877-646-5347. Speaking to the 82nd Airborne in Poland, Joe Biden said, when you're there, you will see men, women standing in front of a damn tank. And everybody was like, did he just tell U.S. troops that they will be there in Ukraine seeing this? Now, some people are saying it's out of context. That's not what he meant. And I'm sure I hope that's not what he meant. The White House has issued a clarification saying, no, nobody's going there. In which case, I think we need a president who can speak better, because that's kind of a scary thing to see. A bunch of outlets being like, Joe Biden corrected, no, troops are not going to be in Ukraine. So we'll be talking about that. We've got a bunch of other stories, and we'll talk a bit about some cultural stuff. We got this story. It's Ben and Jerry's in San Francisco. This standalone store splashed a crying homeless man with a bucket of water. That's what they're being accused of. And I thought, man, that really does exemplify San Francisco and a lot of what these policies have resulted in. So we'll talk about that. Plus, it's Friday, so we're mostly chilling as we normally do. And joining us to hang out tonight is Royce White. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. It's an honor. My name is Royce White. I'm running for Congress in Minnesota's 5th Congressional District against the anti-American candidate Ilhan Omar and her trusted team, the squad, the progressives.
You think you're going to do it? It's an uphill battle?
I think all things are possible through faith in God. I'll say that.
Right on. Cool, man. Well, glad to have you.
Thanks for having me, man.
We also got Brett Dasovic of Pop Culture Crisis hanging out tonight.
How's it going, everybody? Yes, my name is Brett. And as a Minnesota resident growing up, I pray that you manage to win, please.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Hey, everybody. Ian Crossland over here, hanging out with a bunch of dice in front of me, as you probably already guessed.
So many.
Have a wonderful night, and I'll see you soon.
And I'm very excited to have Brett here as well, for sure, because I enjoy going on Pop Culture Crisis with him, but very excited to hear what Royce has to say. I would like to see Ilhan Omar get defeated.
And don't forget to head over to timcast.com, become a member to support us all directly. As a member, you're keeping all of our journalists working, and we're working on stories every single day. We're fact-checking, and you'll also get access to our exclusive segments from this show Monday through Thursday at 8 p.m. But also don't forget to smash that like button, subscribe to this channel, share the show right now. Take that URL, post it wherever you can. Let everybody know. Come watch this show. That's the best way to help. Let's read this first story. We have this one from timcast.com, and I know some people are saying, whoa, 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 this headline is misleading, or let me read it for you. Biden tells the 82nd Airborne they're going to Ukraine, contradicting previous promise. President Joe Biden told troops from the 82nd Airborne Division stationed in, how do you pronounce that, Rzeszów, Poland? Probably absolutely wrong. Where's Jack when you need him? Or yeah. Luke. That they would be going to Ukraine. During his first State of the Union address at the beginning of March, Biden promised that he would not be putting American boots on the ground. Quote, let me be clear, our forces are not engaged and will not engage in the conflict with the Russian forces in Ukraine. However, Biden's words in Poland imply he has changed his mind. Quote, you're going to see when you're there. You're going to see women, young people standing in the middle in front of a damn tank saying, I'm not leaving. So we have this from the Daily Mail. White House forced to correct Biden after hinted U.S. troops would be sent into Ukraine in slip in speech to paratroopers in Poland. Following Biden's comments to the 82nd Airborne Division in Poland, the White House clarified, saying, the president has been clear we are not sending U.S. troops to Ukraine, and there is no change in that position. All right. I just got to say, there's a few scenarios here. One, Joe Biden is a fumbling, bumbling fool and just was misspeaking. saying you'll see it when you're there. Maybe he meant something else. I honestly don't know. What could it mean to tell a troop they'll be seeing people standing in front of a tank saying, you know, they're not moving or whatever? Could Joe Biden have accidentally said this? Could he have accidentally leaked advanced plans? Is the White House lying?
Like, is it a false, like a false signal? We're going to be, we're going to send our.
Is Joe Biden nuts?
Well, I think all of it's on the table. Yeah. He just it's all sounds plausible. So, all four of your scenarios are plausible with this guy.
So. He just sounds so tired. Like all the time, like people make a lot of mistakes when they're tired and their sleep patterns are drawn out. He's in Poland right now, so he's traveling. I could absolutely see something like this being a slip up that he's just not ready for public speaking when he's that tired or that out of it.
Yeah, he's already got a hypothetical set up in his mind, so he's like, when this hypothetical comes, that is a hypothetical. This will be the situation.
Yeah.
But the word when, I mean, Rumsfeld said this about the Iraq War in 2002 before we were in Iraq, Afghanistan only, and he was like, when we go into Iraq, and it was like a signal. Like, what do you mean when?
What do you mean when?
Iraq's not on. This isn't part of the game right now.
Yeah. Well, it is part of the game for them.
Yeah, for sure. I would be mind blown if the United States was not preparing to send troops into Ukraine in some way.
Absolutely.
Or if they don't already have them there in some way.
I would be shocked if Joe Biden wasn't taking mad uppers of some sort.
Yeah.
Like, this is the kind of situation where you pay privateers. This is where privateers came from. You put people into Ukraine, you pay them, but they don't wear American outfits. They're just being paid by the American government.
Yo, you know, you mentioned that Biden seems tired all the time. And watching these past several videos, he is. Like when he was at the G7, when he was talking about the New World Order and stuff, he's just talking like this. You know, I was talking to this guy in a secure military, said, going to be a New World Order. And I'm like, you know what, man? They must have this dude on so many pills to keep him moving. Because for someone his age to be traveling overseas to Europe, change in sleep schedule, working this much, I don't know how he does it. Because I got to be honest, I'm tired.
Yeah.
You know, and I stay in this house most of the time just working.
It's tough for me to, you know, watching it. I think we live in an age of double crosses and triple crosses. It's very hard for me to tell whether or not he's being puppeted or if he's just in on it and he's that sinister. And I think it's very hard to tell with a lot of these global figures in positions like his.
I have a hard time believing that his is on purpose or that he's doing it on purpose. I actually believe that drug. I remember Styx Hexenhammer had a video when he got elected where he's like, I hope the CIA, he's like, I don't want him to be president, but if he is, give him the good drugs. the CIA, I hope they give him the good stuff to keep him awake so that people don't think our president's falling asleep
he's
at the
right.
wheel.
He's completely right. You know, make him work.
Give him the stuff that we can't take.
But let's say this. Outside of whatever Biden is supposed to be saying and whatever he meant. I don't know. What do you think, man? Do you think they're going to send troops? You think NATO will get involved? You think U.S. troops are going to get involved in Ukraine, go up against Russia?
It's hard to say. I think ultimately there is a four-player jump ball geopolitically. You got the free people of many nations around the world. You have your globalists. You got Russia and China. And, you know, I think Glenn Beck laid this out well. I've written it before in my Substack. China and Russia want a nationalist dictatorship, and the globalists want an international dictatorship. And I think Ukraine is the proxy ground for the war between the globalists and China and Russia in many regards. And, you know, we're in the fog of war. It's hard to say what they'll do. I would lean towards they probably will, you know, intervene in the Ukraine in some way coming up shortly.
When I think about, like, who would win from a war between the United States and Russia, it would be China. I mean, or it would be, like, the oligarchs like Klaus Schwab. But, like, when I think of Kolomoisky and how he created that TV station to put Zelensky on a TV show, and then he made the political party to put Zelensky into power, who's he connected with?
I think the people that win ultimately in this are the central bank financial cartels. And when you push, you know, nations on a global stage to this level of pressure and desperation, and you know, it's ultimately going to affect the currency.
Yeah.
It's ultimately going to potentially crash the currency, which would give them the opportunity to usher in a new global digital currency, which takes authoritarianism to an entirely new height. And I think that I don't think that they've been shy about saying that that's their ambition. I think that we, as individual citizens who don't have that type of sinister mindset, find it hard to believe that they would sacrifice people in the Ukraine or anywhere else in order to achieve that goal.
Now we got food shortages coming. Yeah, by fall, because of fertilizer, because of exports in Ukraine. I think Ukraine and Hungary are pulling back on wheat exports. So Europe, they're going to be going hungry quite a bit. Yeah, prices are going to skyrocket.
The Holodomor was like a human created mass Holodomor? Starvation. The Holodomor, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah. Holodomor.
I wouldn't put it past an authoritarian regime to murder hundreds of thousands of people to get an agenda across. It's been happening plenty of times in the past.
I view it more like,
or millions many or of, billions. I wouldn't even put it past them to kill half the planet to get an agenda across. You got to watch out for psychopathy.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, here's a point. You know, first of all, when you bring stuff like that up, the media just dismisses you and calls you crazy.
Well, I'm not saying they're doing it. I'm saying I wouldn't put it past them.
The media will dismiss you and call you crazy, which is crazy. Serial killers exist. There have been many serial killers who were very, very smart, and it's terrifying how calculated they were. Now imagine one of them just decides to get in office.
Yep.
How hard is it? I mean, you know, heaven help us if a psychotic individual, serial killer mindset, gets a high ranking position in a military.
Also, drugs make people crazy. I think Hitler was on so many drugs, and yeah, it was a big part of what pushed him over the edge.
They were doing meth.
Yep.
Kept him going.
You know, I see some of these politicians who have been elected, let's say like an Ilhan Omar, and I've said in the beginning of this campaign, I don't know how much she's in on it. I don't know how much she's initiated into these sort of global level plans. But a lot of them are useful drones for much more predatory and sophisticated predators. Players at the top level. And yes, sociopathic, psychopathic character traits are all on the board. I don't think that anybody should dismiss them. In fact, I think it's a concerted effort for the mainstream media to dismiss these things out of hand because they're in on it.
Oh yeah,
the mainstream media, the five-headed hydra, the New World Order is very clear to me. You got big tech, you got the three industrial complexes, military, media, and medicine, and you got the central bank cartels. And they do their best to make it seem like they're not, in on it together. But when you really take a step back and look at these things from a broader scope, they all interplay and they work together to quell what stories they need to and promote others.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I'm gonna pull this up every time someone mentions the New World Order just so that I can say, here's what we're talking about. This is the Council on Foreign Relations News Guard certified 100 out of 100. And they say, what is the liberal world order? They say world leaders create a series of international organizations and agreements to promote global cooperation on issues including security, trade, health, and monetary policy. The United States has championed the system known as the liberal world order for the past 75 years. During this time, the world has enjoyed unprecedented peace and prosperity. I will dispute that.
Yeah, right.
But this is the idea. This is the Council on Foreign Relations. Whether anybody, they say, what is the UN Security Council? If someone wants to come out and say the New World Order is a crackpot conspiracy, whatever it is you're talking about, fine, sure. When we were talking about big tech and the monetary fund, look at this. Don't they? I think they actually mentioned the International Monetary Fund in here. Do they? Let me make sure.
They're doing it right World in Bank. Front of people.
Yep.
They're
so brazen about it.
There we go. Look at this. Evaluate the success of the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund in promoting trade, development, and economic stability. So when we're talking about the banking industry, big tech, and all that stuff, just if you've got a problem with us believing that, take it up with the Council on Foreign Relations own website, which says it's real. That's the only thing I have to say is, okay, then if you think that's a conspiracy theory, those crazy Council on Foreign Relations people putting those conspiracy theories up, they tricked us. Oh, man, how dare they?
And when they mean peace and prosperity, they mean here, not where we're using it overseas.
For the first time. Where we bomb, where we drop a bomb every 8 seconds.
It's peaceful here, just not all the other places where our influence is.
I mean,
in the West, it's peaceful in the West.
For the most part.
I don't know. I'm pretty sure if you look at the southern border with the cartels cities. Some of the most dangerous parts of Mexico are right on the southern border of the United States. So,
Hidalgo.
I'm not about to agree with them. Like, it's been unprecedented peace and prosperity.
Yeah, you're saying the whole premise is false, is a non-starter. Really.
I mean, yeah.
They might have something to it because there was like how many hundreds of millions were killed in the in the 1900s, like
yeah, 100
World War
plus.
One and Two was the most grotesque thing the humans have ever done to themselves. Really, it was disgusting, and we haven't done that since we built this. So that's the upside. And before, in the 1800s, it was probably as gruesome, not as gruesome, because machine guns changed a lot, but pretty damn gruesome in the 1800s too, like really, really bad. So this maybe, I mean, I do think for the time that this had a purpose, but that the purpose is past. I don't think that we need to go to an autocratic global corporate governance, but I think that the liberal economic order is over.
Well, I think it's just real quick. I think it's funny that they're like, what is the World Trade Organization? What is the World Health Organization? What is international law? But the New World Order is a conspiracy theory.
Yeah.
Like, what? Organizations exist.
I think what we're looking at right here is the fallout from a psychopathic man named Adolf Hitler committing a very evil atrocity on a certain group of people and wanted to expand an empire and have the German war machine go and take over the world. And then you had a bunch of opportunists, whether out of fear or out of ambition, see the opportunity to use him as a scapegoat to say the only way we could stop this from happening is if we consolidate power into international governing bodies. And what's interesting about the way they want to do this is similar to what China has done. If you notice with China and how they've reinitiated the re-education camps, they call them re-education camps, because they know, and I'm not to say that the CCP hasn't killed Uyghurs or cultural minorities in these camps. What I'm saying is that they've moved this sort of Overton window of what it means to be tyrannical and evil in a societal framework. So they'll say, we're not killing them like they did the Jews. We're just putting them in re-education camps. And that sort of quells the visceral feeling we have towards what happened to the Jews. And I think the UN and these globalist international bodies are doing a similar thing when they talk about peace. But then they're not talking about the peace of soul or the peace of spirit. They're talking about physical conflict, but the whole scam is to make people very chaotic and unpeaceful in their minds and bodies and spirits.
Yeah, you can chain two people up and they call it peaceful because they can't fight, but they're not going to be happy. That's not a good peace for those people.
It's still a degradation of humanity and dignity, right?
Let's talk about your story, man. How did you get involved in all this? Where do you come from?
Well, yep, I'll take you back to the beginning because I respect you a lot, and I told you that. I think what you've done, man, is really, and all the people who have done what you've done creating these conversations is an unquantifiable contribution to society. You know, my story all started, I'd say, I came onto the public scene as a basketball player at Iowa State University. I was an All-American high school athlete. I came up through the Nike prep circuit as well. I went to the University of Minnesota, which is in my hometown. But I transferred to Iowa State. I had to sit a year. Back then you got penalized a year for transferring. Now they have a sort of no penalty rule, but back then you got penalized a year. So I had to sit a year. I didn't play until my junior year. I had a good season, and during this season, I talked publicly about my struggles with anxiety. And this was unique because a lot of people in the public square, especially collegiate athletes, but really any public figures, weren't talking about mental health as much. It certainly wasn't the mainstream sort of buzz topic that has become now. And many could argue that I was sort of the first stone in that avalanche. And I'm actually kind of disturbed and disappointed at how it turned out. And we'll talk about that trajectory here a little bit. But anyway, I started to talk about mental health and I was playing well. And so it got a lot of traction because the college sports writers were going, we never had a guy talk about anxiety, but we knew people had these issues. But also this guy is leading his team in every major statistical category: points, rebounds, blocks, steals, assists. And I was the only player in the country to do that. And not many players in the country do that in any season. It's kind of a statistical anomaly. So there's this whole paradigm is created now about, okay, so what do we mean when we say mental health then, or mental health issues or struggles or mental illness or anxiety? And so as the season went on, I continued to prove that I could compete at the highest level against guys who were projected to be first round picks. This went into the NCAA tournament that's going on now. My team, Iowa State, is playing tonight, actually, in the Sweet 16. But in our tournament, we played the defending champs, UConn, coached by Jim Calhoun at the time. And I had an incredible game against them. They had two high-level first-round picks projected in that game. And then we played Kentucky, who had Anthony Davis on the team at the time, and six other first-round draft picks projected. and I was the dominant player in that game. So then, you know, the talk was, okay, this guy's probably one of the most NBA ready players in his class. I declare for the draft, and something very, very strange, you could say, happened. It exploded the mental health conversation, because now the question was, how does the NBA view mental illness? Do they view it as a character flaw, or do they view it as this integral piece of this comprehensive health model, right? This progressive view of health and mental health as a spectrum where everybody has a mental health, right? So that question was posed by the mainstream establishment. And the answer was they did view it as a character flaw. And I pushed back on that narrative immediately. Like, as soon as the story started to drop, Sports Illustrated, USA Today, Royce is declaring for the draft, but he's a mystery pick because of this whole anxiety snafu. I'm going, no, this ain't a character flaw. And the fact that it's even a question proves that you guys don't understand the real dynamic of what's happening with this mental health crisis. Long story short, I get drafted to the Houston Rockets 16th, but I was projected to have a top five talent, NBA ready skill set. And upon my arrival in the NBA, I discovered by reading through my collective bargaining agreement, our CBA, that there wasn't a single mention of mental health in the entire document. And I went to my team and I said, listen, I want to be as good of a player and as productive as I possibly can be for you guys. But I understand that obviously by the language in this document, that the understanding around mental health and the issue like the one I deal with, anxiety disorder, is lacking. And I'm willing to have an open conversation with you guys transparently about what I deal with so that we can have a better relationship in trying to make me the most productive player I could be. Okay. They said, okay, that's good. Okay, well, let's put it in writing, I said. Let's figure this out. Well, how does this look in writing? Oh, we can't put any of this in writing. I go, why not? The color of the socks a guy has to wear in the game is in writing.
Is it really?
Oh, it absolutely is. And the penalties. And the real reason that I said we needed to put it in writing, because the CBA already had a banned substance list that had anti-anxiety medication on it.
Whoa.
Okay, so now I'm going, everybody's telling this narrative that the pro sports world is uninitiated with mental health as a topic. But here's this banned substance list with tons of mental health related content in it. So somebody knew something about mental health or knows something. And so I said, okay, so let's say, for example, they basically said, well, look, you can take the Xanax, because Xanax was on the banned substance. You can take it. Don't worry. You got a doctor's prescription. And I go, well, wait a minute. Why is it on the list? Is it because if you take Xanax for 2 weeks, even as prescribed, you can get addicted? And that is the truth about Xanax. It's the most addictive drug there is in the world. And so they were right to have it on the banned substance list. But my point was to say, hey, the reason I mostly take Xanax is because I have a fear of flying, or that fear of flying exacerbates my anxiety. So how about we cut some of the Xanax out per year by allowing me to drive from Minnesota to, say, Chicago? 6 hour drive, a little bit longer hike than a private charter jet, you know, catered and all of that. But I was willing to take the hit because I understood the dangers of taking Xanax for 9 months continuously. And they said, oh no, we can't do that. And so that's where the fight began ultimately between me and the league. And I became this spokesperson on mental health. And what I was really trying to say is, like, it wasn't about me getting special or preferential treatment. It was to say that the NBA represents a global corporate community, which they do. Yeah. In fact, it's the watering hole for every industry in our society, and that there was something wrong with the global corporate community and how they viewed humanity, and that mental health wasn't about the DSM or diagnosis. It was to say that mental health is another way to say the human condition, where mind, body, and spirit converge. And they wanted nothing to do with that. And they blackballed me for that. And they told me, you're too smart for your own good. We agree with you about mental health. We agree it's an epidemic. We agree it's the crisis over the hill. But who are you to tell us to change anything? You don't have any leverage. So you can either play, or you'll never become the spokesperson that you could and we could make you be on this issue. And I've been fighting that battle for the last 10 years.
Did you leave the league right away?
I gave them the ultimatum that we needed to put a mental health policy in place, or that I wouldn't play.
And then what happened?
I was traded from Houston to, what happened was the Houston Rockets owner at the time, Leslie Alexander, who now sold the team to Fertitta, who owns it now, but at the time it was Leslie Alexander, and his attorney said to me, "Hey, my daughter has anxiety." His name is Mr. Goldberg. He comes into a meeting. First of all, they forced me to go to a psychiatrist every day. And the psychiatrist told him, don't do that. This isn't about him needing psychiatric help. He's telling you guys that we need something in writing that acknowledges mental health as a core component of overall health. And I agree with him. So then they got pissed off at the psychiatrist. and so they made me do that every day or else I would be fined, they said. So I went. I said, okay, I'll go. Me and this guy could chat it up. Actually, we'll start designing the policy, which we did. Basically they walked in there and after 2 months of back and forth and them telling me that, you know, for me to bust to a game could be a salary cap infringement and, you know, all of these other weird kind of, you know, business tactics, intimidation tactics. They finally just came in and said they sent an emissary, right? And it was this attorney and he goes, listen, my daughter has anxiety. She doesn't like to fly either, but I'd make her and she'll thank me for it later. She hates me now. I agree with you. This is a big issue. And if you agree to go to our D League, which is now called the G League minor league affiliate, in the off season, I'll help you put this mental health policy in place and I'll make sure that the owners accept it. When the off season came, there was no talk of that policy and I was traded to Philadelphia. And Philadelphia released me before the season started, even though the local media there in Philly thought that I was a shoe-in to make that team. But Sam Hinkie, who had been the assistant GM under Daryl Morey, who was an interesting character in this whole story arc, he was the understudy of Daryl Morey. So they basically did a trade and dump. And I was, you know, 21 years old. I was naive. I had the inclination or the instinct to block the trade, but I was encouraged by the union that it would be maybe advantageous for me because Philadelphia is in this East Coast corridor and there's a lot of games that I would be able to drive to throughout the season. So, you know, ultimately after the Philadelphia thing, I just didn't get another shot. I wrote letters. I had medical professionals, mental health professionals write letters and say, this mental health issue is real, that the NBA is in a perfect position to back up its promotion of caring about the greater good. By just putting in a very simple, doable mental health policy. And, they just ignored me.
Why do you think they did that?
At the time, I thought it was because there was something they didn't know. I was arrogant. I was mistaken. I was naive. I thought that I was going to be able to bridge the gap through genuine, participation of some type of attitude or perspective that they had gotten wrong. But that wasn't the case. The entire corporatocracy knew. That psychological, the predatory, predation, let's say, on the human psychology was the next iteration of the war that they wanted to wage on the common people. I didn't get that at the time, that social media was around the corner and the dopamine, the dopamine war was coming down they knew it. So when I went to talk about mental health and say, hey, hold on, there's a cultural mental health renaissance and revolution that needs to happen here right now. I'm sitting there thinking that they have archaic views about mental health, but I was mistaken. They were advanced around the human psychology and they plan to be predatory with it.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
So they were planning on like they knew that it was going to be weaponized, like the mental illness would be weaponized. So they didn't want to get involved in it or something.
Let me interject real quick. There are companies when it comes to mobile apps. There was a viral. I covered this several years ago. A company says we can program your audience for you. So yes. When you've got big companies that are planning on making mobile apps, they're going to consultants saying, how can we make it so that people become addicted to this? And then the company will analyze their data and be like, do these things and people will become addicts.
Yeah.
It's digital addictions.
So, and you can place that or stand that next to a 21-year-old kid coming in saying, hey, why is the alcohol cutoff not at halftime? Why is it okay? Why is it morally and ethically okay for us to use taxpayer money to build these arenas and then build parking structures where we basically incentivize people to drink and drive with their kid or come to the game and get drunk in front of their kid or even worse, somebody else's kid and yell this belligerent shit at the game? Like, oh, how? They were like, and I'm sitting here saying all of this based on logic and reason. They're like, we're about to go to town on the working class through psychological manipulation.
I think it's simpler put, to be honest, because I think, you know, the way you describe it is what's happening. But their attitude is probably like, how much did we just pay this guy to make our mobile app that makes these young kids addicted to it?
$50 million.
We can't have this guy screwing that up.
Yeah.
Right. So they thought you were a threat to the system, that you were going to gain too much power and influence in the system.
Twofold. Yeah. Yes. But there's a canary in the coal mine in this situation. Yes, in the immediate, they're like, this kid is trying to change the status quo and that's a danger. But the mental health topic as a topic in general is the one topic that puts a mirror up to the individual. So yeah. In spirit, they didn't want to have the mental health conversation because they didn't want to have to look at themselves.
Your story to me sounds like, you know, you thought that once you got in, people would be willing to engage with you and you'd have a positive impact. But the reality is for political office, even you end up getting into a position where there's a train coming at you and you're trying to push against it. That train's going to keep coming. So you go in good faith, think you're going to have this impact. And then we hear it across the board from the presidency to members of Congress. It's like, as soon as you get in, the machine controls you.
Yeah.
That. And then if you resist it enough, eventually the machine just shoves you out of the way.
And, you know, as a young kid growing up, I grew up in the Michael Jordan era. All right. In the Twin Cities, in Chicago, WGN. We got all the local Bulls games.
You had WGN,
in the
90s.
Yeah, we had WGN in the Twin Cities. So yeah. We got to see all the home Bulls games. So I was a basketball lover, right? And when you grow up in a single mother household and she pays the rent with her tips and you go to the gym and you create a relationship with the local recreation center manager and he allows you to spend that extra time in the gym all by yourself, just shooting, playing games with yourself to 100. I'm the Bulls one night. I'm the other team the other night. You grow up with a very naive view of what the basketball industry or basketball itself is all about. And I really thought, that the NBA was this institution that was based on all of the things that basketball had been for me growing up. A safe haven, a place of teamwork and hard work, genuineness, meritocracy. And you get there and it's just like, nah, kid, that we're a cog in the machine and don't rail against us because we'll squash you.
How do you get, so what's the next step in this process for you? How do you get from there to now you're running as a Republican against Ilhan Omar? Seems like there's something big happened in between there.
Well, a lot of things happened, but mainly that, the same liberal establishment that I've watched take hold of the cultural narrative over the last 10 years was the same one that tried to defame me and poke fun at me 10 years ago.
It's the same one that is making a lot of money in China.
Absolutely. And so, you know, I was in Canada for 2 years. I saw them go after Jordan Peterson. I was living there, playing for London Lightning in London, Ontario, in the National Basketball League of Canada. And I watched that. It was the most peculiar thing because I was a nomad up until that point. I was a cultural Democrat, as many young black men are growing up in these inner cities. They're cultural Democrats, although they tend to be conservative, really culturally, but in party affiliation, they tend to be Democrat. And it was just the oddest thing to me. I had never seen just me personally I had never seen people go after somebody who was so reasonable and logical and just seemed to be kind of a nice guy with such obscene and ridiculous points. And I'm sitting here as a person who fought the NBA going, I have genuine points about the establishment that we should be talking about. Why are you guys going after him about pronouns? I don't get it. And so I watched that. And then I came back from Canada, played in the Big Three. And while I was playing in the Big Three, I started to talk about, you know, broader issues politically, Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, the concentration camps in China, Epstein, you know, all of this was back in 2019. And then I wrote a book, an open letter to LeBron James, entitled Epistle to the King. And I basically lay this out from post-World War II, all the way up until the 2016 election of Donald Trump, of how the black community has been basically used as this linchpin, this cultural linchpin, of this Marxist, you know, this sort of Marxist globalist revolution. And then George Floyd happened.
And you were right there.
Well, the pandemic happened first.
Yeah.
And I was introduced to Steve Bannon's show. I was introduced to his PBS Frontline interview. I had already knew about him since 2000, you know, since Trump ran, but I didn't really do a deep dive. I still had a surface view of him. Then I saw the PBS Frontline interview, and then the pandemic broke out. Then I got introduced to War Room, like, it, as soon as the pandemic broke out, and I was listening to it every day. It was the most accurate coverage of the pandemic at the day. It was pretty much some of the only coverage. And then George Floyd happened 2 months later in May. That was March, and then May, George Floyd happened.
What did that change for you?
Go ahead.
I just got to bring up one quick point as we get into George Floyd. Mm-hmm. You know that story about the mural of George Floyd with the crown that got struck by lightning and exploded?
I don't know that story.
There's a wall.
I know the
wall.
With
a mural.
Yep.
And you, so in the middle was George Floyd, and there was a crown over his head. On a partly cloudy day, meteorologists reported a lightning strike. Witnesses said they saw the lightning strike, and it blew out only George Floyd from the building. The whole building was like no roof damage. That's just a freaky story that I want to bring up, you know, whenever it comes to the George Floyd stuff, because that's crazy.
God's wrath is fast.
Or metallic that's paint. Or both. Both.
But,
could be both.
Like someone staged it or something?
I don't know.
That's crazy.
Is that true? Someone staged it?
Oh, no. I have no explanation.
Okay, yeah.
Like God's wrath.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
Well, yeah.
Well, that's what a lot of people felt. Yeah. Like, or that lady who was mocking the pandemic, and then you see this one, the comedian?
Mm-hmm.
And then she just faints, just like falls back and hits her head.
COVID. Yeah, she was making fun of.
I just wanted to bring up the George Floyd thing because there's that weird moment that happened. But
said Jesus loves me the most, and
right.
That's when
yeah.
she fell
yep,
down.
That's right.
It was like, yeah. God,
yeah.
It's like, nah.
And then she hit her
Jesus
head.
Loves everyone the same.
You can't,
bro.
And you can't. Well, what we talk about Christianity, taking God's name in vain is a grave sin, and the wrath is quick.
You really can't. Mess
but
with
I don't.
It's
I
not
I
worth
don't,
messing around.
I don't want to derail. I just wanted to mention that story because it's crazy. But so now
George Floyd. So look, the George Floyd thing happened. So I write this letter to LeBron James where I basically lay out how black people, specifically pop black figures, have been used as a three-card Monty to not only keep the black community in this in this place of submission as a community, but they've been used to now go and attack the rights of others on the grounds of this cultural, you know, this culture war and an information war. So I lay this out in the book. The book's 255 pages. It ends up being, it's like 40,000 words or something. And then George Floyd happens. And my whole point to LeBron James was to say that in the position you've been given, God given, that you have an obligation to lead in a way that's more genuine, authentic, and honest. That was the whole crux of the book. But I had to go through the history, right? Because I can't just assume that he's initiated into this post-World War II liberal world order type. You know, I just didn't assume that. So I kind of took him through it in good faith. And then George Floyd happens, and I'm like, oh, I just wrote about what I need to go do, right? And so I knew from watching the narrative be crafted and manipulated by the mainstream media that they were going to try and hijack that moment in a variety of ways. And I knew that I was perfectly positioned to go into my community and lead in a way that changed the narrative. And that's what I did. We led several. First of all, chaos broke out. There was fires. There was unrest, real unrest that was on the verge of being anarchy. It was anarchy, but it was on the verge of getting really out there. And in the middle of that, I called my basketball friends up, other guys who have big names in Minnesota sports community, at least. And I said, we got to go do something. I'm leading this protest. If you don't come, don't shake my hand. We're not friends no more. You guys got to put more in. And we led peaceful protests. But I wasn't going to allow the mainstream media or their BLM subsidiary dictate the tone of the protest. So instead of going to the first precinct, we went to the Federal Reserve, right? A lot of these young white liberal women who want to participate and are really passionate and active. I'm sitting on top of the stoop outside of the Federal Reserve, and we're doing a die-in at the Federal Reserve, and they're looking at me like I got three eyes, like, why are we here? And that's when it hit me. It hit me that this entire culture war, information war, is not just a byproduct of individual people having low morals and ethics. That is a part of it. But the establishment has gotten really good at fooling people. And I was able to go out and fight that just by being one man with a profile in my community that had gained the respect of a few people in my immediate circle. And who would stand around me at a moment of chaos and turmoil and lead, physically take dominion in a community and say, hey, if you have a grievance, that's great. That's good. You should participate as a citizen peacefully. And if you want to negotiate the social contract between you and the state, you first have to identify the institutions that really preside over you. So we're on our way to the Fed. And if you don't know what the Fed is, when we get here and do this die-in, I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. The mainstream media didn't even want to cover that. They wanted it to seem like I was an emerging civil rights activist for Black Lives Matter, and they didn't want to give me any airtime once again to explain my position because it's antithetical to what they were trying to accomplish. And so that's how eventually, in 2020, when we played with the Big Three again, Jeff Quatnitz, who was a co-owner with Ice Cube, used to be partners with Steve Bannon. And I told Jeff, if you don't introduce me to Steve, me and you aren't friends anymore. And Jeff goes, I got you. He sends me the number right away, and I get hooked up with Steve. We start to have great conversations, build a relationship. He's a mentor, friend of mine, and the rest is history.
In Minnesota, which district are you? Five?
CD5, yeah.
CD5. What's going on with that right now? Ilhan Omar is obviously, she's the incumbent. Is there a Republican primary with a bunch of candidates?
There's two other candidates in the field right now, Cece Davis, and a woman named Shakri Abdi-Rahman. Our convention is on April 2nd, so coming up here in a few weeks for the endorsement. Our primary wouldn't be until August 9th, so we have a late primary. And I'm not certain what those two hope to do. I kind of like Cece Davis just in general. I kind of enjoy her. She's been on Fox a few times, and I've heard her speak. I met her one day just randomly at a restaurant there in our local watering hole. So I enjoy her. I don't think that she has the understanding of how the global affects the local to be effective right now. But the other candidate, Shakri Abdi-Rahman, I think she's a plant. I'm just going to say it. You know, when you start saying I'm an ex-veteran, Muslim, Somali, immigrant, who's a battered woman, I have three kids, I'm a single mother, you're just playing the same identity politics game that the Democrats have played. And she's Somali. I mean, this would sound like conspiracy theory, but I can completely see in a guy like Soros taking a very similar Republican candidate, putting a Republican tag on them and running the same identity Marxist political game theory, and hedges bets. So, you know, I just, not saying that that's true. I'm just saying that the rhetoric from her is like, I'm a neoliberal who's Republican. And I just think that that's completely inappropriate. I think it's manipulative, dishonest, and I'm going to do everything I can to make sure that I'm the GOP candidate.
Now here's a challenge. This is a D26 district.
Yeah.
There was a lot of people were complaining about Kimberly Klasick.
You said it's D26?
D26.
Okay.
Yeah, so I mean, for those that aren't familiar, that's like a 26% advantage typically for Democrats.
Yeah.
Two to one Democrat-Republican. There were a lot of people saying that Kim Klasick was wasting people's money and energy by trying to run in an area that was so heavily Democrat. I disagree, man. If Republicans and Democrats... Well,
thank you for that, Tim. No, I appreciate that.
No, but listen. If, at the very least, the fact that you are running... You are spreading a message. You are telling people there's an alternative. You're telling people there's an option. If no one ever tries in these districts to win at all.
Lose the whole thing slowly.
Then there's no message.
But you lose. The more important thing is that, and this is a fair criticism of the Republican establishment, I think. And myself being an athlete, a lifelong athlete and competitor. If you're on a team, if us four are on our team and we come to practice every day, you show up late. You smoke weed during the week. You party. You don't get sleep. When we get to practice, you don't know the plays. You come in late, right? When the guy in front of you goes and does what he's supposed to do, you don't do it. You don't pay attention to him. The coach is talking. You're playing with your hair or telling a joke. All that I can deduct from that is that you don't want to win. You don't want to play and you don't want to win. And I think the Republican establishment has to be, you know, there has to be real, there has to be a very real skepticism of the genuineness of the Republican platform at the party level right now, because where is the evidence that they want to actually win these elections?
I think they just want to stay. There's no urgency. I don't sense any urgency from candidates anymore. From people that are already in, they're just trying to collect a paycheck and stay in office. They spent 2 years.
Either that or they're in on it.
Running for re-election.
Either that or they're in on it.
In on what?
They are in on it.
On what, when you say
in? The new liberal world order.
You think they're getting bought out, and don't realize they're getting bought out by the
world order? I think a lot of them are the controlled opposition. And look, I don't want to be disparaging to the Republican Party because I just got here. I'm just a third party who came from the void as a nomad and renegade anti-establishment guy. And I'm saying that the evidence of the Republicans trying to actually put forward an effort to really win and fight in these districts that they say are unwinnable is so few and far between that I can't come up with any other reason that either they're just losers, some of them, or they're actually in on it and they're getting a kickback for the managed decline.
Let me tell you, man, in West Virginia, second most Trump supporting state, these schools are all woke. The school boards are woke. And there are people who are conservative who think those crazy problems don't affect my kids because we're in West Virginia. They don't go to the meetings. And it turns out these schools, you've got all of the critical race theory. You've got all the wokeness, gender ideology. Yeah. You've got the left, the Democrats, and the progressives going into red areas, spreading the word, recruiting, trying to slip it in under the door in urban areas. Republicans are told, don't bother fighting at all. You're wasting time and energy. It's a lopsided. It's asymmetrical warfare.
How did they plan to win? Look, and here's the other thing. The Democrat platform, the neoliberal Marxist globalist platform has a better sales pitch in the physical realm. It says anything goes.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Anything that your little heart desires, you can have. And there is no judgment about it. That's a good sales pitch for the physical realm, for the here and now, which is kind of how the Bible becomes profound in saying that this thing is all going to go to hell eventually because people become more interested in their wickedness than they are in their faith in God. So my point in bringing that up is not to say that this needs to become a theocracy or to say, you know, to try and be a Bible thumper. But what I'm saying is that it's very clear that paradigm should incentivize and make it even more urgent that the Republicans have to fight at every place that they possibly can. Because if not, you have to transform hearts and minds and see a bigger give people deeper meaning to their life. Because the drugs and the fast validation and reward is on the Democrat side.
It is true that George Soros provided funding for local district attorneys in a variety of places around the country. That's I think The Guardian reported on that. Fox News got all mad when Newt Gingrich said it. And he was like, what? Like, this is like mainstream reporting that he's doing this. So you've got powerful leftist organizations and institutions going into conservative areas, changing how the laws are being enforced, changing how schools are teaching these kids. Florida, for instance, right? I mean, they're passing these laws because they have the political power to do so, and it is an issue. But hearing it in West Virginia, people don't want to believe it. Republicans need to be going into blue districts and doing what you're doing, yep. Coming on shows, writing books, putting out the messages, speaking, and just in general, doing the same thing. Where are the conservatives, moderates, or libertarians? I mean, come on, libertarians. Let's get some libertarians to go run for school board in a blue area.
Yeah,
they don't do it.
I mean, I come from a cultural Democrat community, and I can just say that the conservative representation as I was growing up is completely non-existent. Yeah, and so I'm 30. So it's not just in the here and now that the Republicans haven't pushed back or dedicated or invested in the minority vote. And I don't say minority to play intersectional politics. I'm just saying that minorities at this demographic, Latinos and blacks, make up a significant portion of the voter base. And I had no idea what the Republican platform is. And that's not all due to the Democrats or the mainstream media. That's due to a laziness and an inaction on their behalf. So I'm happy to be able to fight, you know, for that now.
Whenever, you know, Seamus is on the show fairly often, and we'll talk about religion, and we'll often point out to people when we're having conversations, maybe like off the show or whatever, a lot of the arguments made by secular liberals and atheists tend to be a caricature of the beliefs of Christian conservatives or, you know, Christian groups because they don't interact with them. Typically what you'll see is, you know, we talk about there'll be like a meme ascribing a belief to conservatives that isn't true, and then you actually ask someone who's a regular churchgoer, and they'll be like, we don't do that. I think the issue is one thing they don't really do is go into these areas and just meet and talk with people, be active in the school meetings, actively campaign, put up billboards, try and actually run. Yeah. You might not be able to win, and herein lies the problem. Who's going to want to invest, you know, millions of dollars into a congressional campaign in a D+26 district? But if you do it once, you do it twice, maybe the third time, you can take that district.
Well, listen, I think we got a very good chance. I hear what you're saying, and I agree with you.
Look at Miami.
Yeah.
Miami district flipped Republican, and it was like D+20 or something. Let me see if I can pull that one up.
I agree with you, and I think the Republican Party, or the free people, let's say, in this country, should definitely invest in putting up the fight. And I believe in the war of attrition. But I will say that I think we have a good chance of beating her in this election.
I think you're interesting because you have a unique perspective on mental health. I have a feeling that a lot of what people are going through now is a lot of mental health issues. I went through it in like 2006-07 when I got into social media, started doing internet videos, and I rapidly went crazy. After like 2 years, I wanted to kill myself. Literally, I was like, this is it. There's nothing to live for at this point. The World Economic Order, it's taken over. I'm just here to die. That was my thought. It was horrifying. And I think so many people are going through that right now, this despair, and then they're medicating. And I mean, you want to talk about the medical, global military or medical industry, you name that as one of your five heads on the Hydra,
yep.
The food and medical industry combined, the sugar industry.
The food is the medical industrial complex.
Dude, yeah. If these people that, and I think because they're numbed and they're afraid, they're just voting for what the TV tells them to vote for.
True.
And they need a voice that they can relate to.
I'll say this. I agree with you. So when the globalists, for example, say you're going to own nothing and be happy, they don't mean we're going to make your lives more meaningful or more healthy. They're saying we're going to make the material high so good that you're not going to notice we're stealing from you. You're not going to notice that we're fucking you. Right. And that's really what they mean when they say it. And what they're relying on ultimately is to say we're big and you're small. So even if you know, and a lot of cultural Democrats and liberals do, and are amenable to the idea that there is a system or the man or an elite that are screwing them. But their MO is that I have no power in that game. That's part of how a lot of the politics at the grassroots level have devolved into the identity politics, because they say, well, if I can't win at a big scale, then I'm going to make you say my pronouns. And that's how they feel power.
No, I just want to point out Florida's 27th congressional district currently has a Republican, Maria Elvira Salazar. It's D+4. I think she was on with Tucker, though, recently. Wasn't she? Was that her?
I don't remember. Maybe.
Maybe that was her. But D+4, not D+20, so I was wrong about that. And maybe you're a Republican. You're like, I think we can get a D+4. We can try. But this was considered safe Democrat in all of the polling, they were like, it's heavy blue. It's not going to flip. And then it did. I think there actually was another district that flipped as well. It was two districts. Maybe one was that. This is a Barack Obama district.
Yeah.
This is a Joe Biden and Hillary Clinton district that now has a Republican representing it.
We can't write. Here's part of what's happened with the Republican Party, I believe. I'll say this. I think because they have a fundamental there's a thread of Christianity baked into the Republican Party that they rightfully now see the order of charity in the proper way, that the order of charity is local. They've just been pushed to their little corners, and now the order of charity is what he's saying is right around them, and they're going, we don't have to go back into the belly of the beast with the ministry of truth. And I think Republicans and many Christians have forgotten about the importance of ministry. And that's what we're talking about here. And that's what I did when the George Floyd situation happened. I took a ministry of truth into the belly of the beast, and I confronted the lies, rebuke and refute. So, and I'm not condemning Republicans and Christians on the right for doing that, because I understand that the order of charity is proper, and that the order of charity is first that which is local to you, yourself, your family, and your immediate community. But we are at war, and the rules change when you're at war, and we're in a culture war and an information war. And as you see, we're in a kinetic guns up war as well.
Yeah, the 26th district is also D plus one, and that's a Republican right now as well. So those projections were way off. People can make a change if you go out and you actually fight for it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, rapidly too with the internet.
Look at the NCAA tournament right now. Look at St. Peter's, the 15th seed.
Oh, what's
come
happening?
On, they're in the Sweet 16, man. I just come from the sports world where the underdog is not only can you win, but it feels so damn good when you're the underdog and you win anyway. So just as a sportsman and a competitor, this was the only, I could have run in a district that was more red. I could have run in a statewide race where we had a bigger Republican constituency, governor, Senate. But to go into the belly of the beast first is honorable. It's actually fruitful, in my opinion.
I moved to New York City after college, 2001, September 5th, 6 days before the buildings came down. And my dad was like, you're going into the belly of the beast, Ian.
Yeah.
Put this $20 in your sock.
Praise God.
I was like, all right, here we go, brother.
Let me pull up the story. It seems to be, it's just a weird story, but it's a belly of the beast, man. We got this story from the Daily Mail. Ben and Jerry's manager is accused of dousing mentally ill homeless person with a bucket of water because she was crying on the sidewalk outside of the store in San Francisco. I don't even want to play the video. It's just a crying homeless person.
It's terrible.
Dude apparently comes out and splashes water on him. But there's so much here. Obviously, there's like a culture, cancel culture outrage going on over this, and people on social media are like, how dare you? But man, does this hit at the very serious problems of cities like San Francisco with representation like Nancy Pelosi. Granted, she's at the federal level, but still, this is her city. She doesn't seem to care about it. You've got the homeless crisis. You've got the drug crisis. You've got the failed policies. You've got human waste all over the streets. And then you've got people saying that California is 5 years ahead of the rest of the country. So you look at stories like this, and it's like this Ben and Jerry's manager is just like a regular guy.
Yeah. Is this Dowsing. Ben and Jerry's like the ice cream?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
The woke ice cream company.
The woke ice cream company. That's right.
The extremely politically correct woke ice cream company.
What was
as
that?
Long as it's not homeless people.
What was that really awful flavor they had? It was woke and had like a weird thing in it. I can't remember what it was. I'll try and look.
It had cinnamon in it. You hated
no,
it.
No. What? I love cinnamon.
Yeah,
what are you talking about?
I hated that one.
I absolutely love cinnamon.
I enjoyed it.
That's weird. You are so wrong. I am offended that someone cinnamon bun ice cream so good.
You ever sucked on a cinnamon stick before?
No.
That's pretty good.
But
you ever do the cinnamon challenge? You guys ever do that?
No.
Take a scoop of cinnamon and you put it in your mouth. I'm not suggesting you do it. Just don't breathe out your nose. Yeah. I did it with Shay Carl.
But talking about what happens to a city when you don't fight for it.
You lose it.
Yeah, and then some. I mean, would you describe San Francisco as being lost or maybe something worse?
It's just, it devolves into Satanism.
I lived there for a little while. You guys ever lived there?
I've been there. I've never lived there, but I've passed through for periods of time. And it wasn't as bad when I was there. This was a long, long time ago.
It was like 2015 for me.
And to be fair, to like what you're saying, you have to keep fighting because I hate to make this a left versus right thing. They're not going to stop. Like, I still get, like, I am shocked by how many door-to-door campaigners I would get in Minnesota in areas that were safe, blue, right? Yeah. And the amount of messages you get from, you know, this is so-and-so from this campaign, and you're like, stop messaging me. Yeah. And you're still going to keep getting them, and you're still going to keep getting them because they never stop. So if you're going to at least try to make a change, how can you just say, oh, well, this district is clearly blue. Why would I even try? They're going to try. They're going to go into those red districts, and they're going to keep trying, whether it's through the educational system, whether it's door-to-door campaigning, sending you messages. They will not stop. It's cultural on every level. So we can't, you know, again, I hate making this a left versus right thing because I don't consider myself a Republican or a Democrat or any of that, but
you're
can't
stop. You're a populist.
There you go.
I'd say so, yeah.
Yeah, so like you have to at least be willing to fight for it, or else what's the point? You're just giving in.
Yeah, no, I mean, and these people aren't messing around. They're not kidding around. I mean, I think the whole three-card Monty manipulation is whoever the voters are now, let's guilt them into voting Democrat because Republicans are racist. And while that takes place, we will use those wins to systematically go into the communities at the grassroots educational school level and indoctrinate the next generation so that we won't even have to lie anymore. We won't even have to manipulate them. They'll believe the things we believe.
The three card Monty is like that game where you have three cups with like a ball under it.
Or cards or whatever.
And so you're saying they're using the black community as like a distraction and they're getting people to look away so that they can move the card.
The Holocaust and Adolf Hitler are the scapegoat and the justification for New World Order. Black people are the justification for authoritarianism, authoritarian church of LGBTQ anti-human American politics. Same game. The same game.
I got a question about this, yeah. Right? That they, some politician recently said in the past couple of years that for Democrats, the way to the black vote is through the church. And you've heard that before, right?
Yeah.
I'm
lie.
But I'm wondering why.
50% sure I get what they're saying, but it's a lie.
But you constantly hear about these Democrats going to these black churches to get votes or whatever. And they say that, oh, it's because the churches have sway in the community. And then, but now.
Overblown, I think.
Right. Well, tell me about that. Why, where does that trope come from?
I think the biggest, two things. One, it's through pop culture. It's through the subtle, very underhanded presentation of a white supremacy patriarchy. And that if you vote Republican, then that is the patriarchy. And so black people are just, but it's also the Republicans don't feel the need to clear that up.
Right.
They haven't felt the need to clear that story up. And I get it. I mean, it's just not going to win the game.
I was like Morgan Freeman. He was like, don't call me a black man. I'm not going to call you a white man. We're just men.
Yeah. Some of that. I mean, look, here's the thing with the, there's a very real, from a biology standpoint, I don't like on the right when people say, well, race isn't even real. Like, race is only real. But okay, go to a state penitentiary and see how people group themselves out of self-defense and preservation. Race is real. And people group themselves in certain ways based on how they look and like cultural values. And there's nothing wrong with that. What's wrong is when you give yourself the right to violate somebody else's natural God-given inalienable human rights based on their race. There's nothing wrong to say you're a mixed race man, but you look like my grandmother looks whiter than you. By the way, she was Norwegian, but you're a white man. I'm a black man, and that's fine.
It was interesting you said it was based on how they look and how their culture of values are, but not really about who their ancestors were.
Right.
It really, it's that illusion of what they look like.
See, because the ancestor thing, once you get there, it all gets murky. Because what is white if you go ancestral?
Yeah,
Irish, Spanish, Italian. Your guy. Who's the guy who came pick me up? No.
I don't know who picked you up.
It's been Brian?
Brian.
Yeah, Brian. My guy Brian. My guy Brian, he's in the front seat of the car. He's driving and he goes, I'm Italian.
Yeah.
And I go, huh?
Amazing. I know.
Right. But he was like, but I joined the army in the German and I was on a military base. So is he technically he's an Italian citizen. He's an American citizen. All I'm saying is that what is white gets murky. Black is different. I'll tell you why. Because black were full swath brought over in a transatlantic slave trade, and we lost our indigenous ties. But a lot of the white immigrants that came to this country came with those cultural, ethnic heritages still intact. So, yeah, I mean, it gets murky when you go to the ancestral place. I would say that if you look at communities, blacks tend to be grouped in certain areas, but that's changing. There's gentrification. But there's nothing wrong with saying that there's race. I don't like when the right sometimes has this boomerang effect where whatever the absurd cultural narrative is on the left, they just go opposite out of.
That happened with the Florida Parental Rights and Education Bill. I started seeing a bunch of conservatives following the narrative of the left that the bill stopped teachers from saying, you know, teaching kids about being gay or whatever, which is just absolutely not true. The bill in no way stops teachers from walking up to a kid and saying these things. And I'm like, the bill came out. There was a debate and amendments over it. And then the bill that was seeking to be passed says nothing to do about banning the word gay. It just says you can't have, you know, sex ed effectively for pre-K to third grade. But the Democrats ran with this narrative because it was effective. And then I saw Republicans arguing that narrative. And I'm like, it's made up. You're not arguing anything because there's nothing there.
Yeah.
But they walk into these traps.
Yeah. Well, and it's just, you know, it's part of its laziness, you know, and just intellectual laziness. And we built a society that makes it very hard to be a deep critical thinker.
Yeah, I like talking about the differences of genetics, of species, of people because of the ancestry. Like, that's fascinating to me that sickle cell anemia, for instance, was showing up more readily in, like, the black community in the 60s or something because of some genetic difference of genetics of ancestry. I don't know. But it's interesting to talk about with everybody, any race, color, in person of any language. It's interesting stuff. Like, it's good to know, too.
I think the issue with racism. We've talked to a lot of people about it. The reason why it's very obviously rejected by most people, especially in modern times, is that, you know, if you have a guy from Somalia and a guy from, say, Haiti, they might both have dark skin but be wildly different in terms of their genetics. You know, one guy might be small, one might be tall. But then if you have laws or policy based on race, how do you actually determine someone?
It sees them as the same person.
Yeah, exactly.
It's actually racist to do it that way, to see the Somali and the Haitian person as both being black or African.
Well, that's American. Exactly it. Because if you were to try and make an argument about, like, well, the average height, or it's like, well, I mean, some people from, you know, are black and short, and some people are black and tall.
Right.
And so that's the problem with race, is that it really, really is superficial. Granted, I think a conversation around...
Well, it's superficial unless 30 million black babies are genocided at Planned Parenthood over 60 years.
We can talk about that.
Well, you got a question
That's where race gets real for me. So, you know, my point to my conservative Republican counterparts is to say, stop saying racism isn't real, because you're giving these neoliberals an out.
That's crazy, because I thought it, like, I think of it as a class issue, but I think you're right that there was some serious racism going on by the people.
Just look at the results.
Well, wasn't that already proven?
30 million black babies at a Planned Parenthood. There'll be more babies to die at Planned Parenthood in the next 2 weeks than died in the Ukraine.
Wow.
Maybe not 2 weeks. Let's say a month, 2 months.
When does life begin?
It's a tough one. I mean, at conception.
That's what I'd say.
Spiritually.
I think.
If we talk, look, I'm anti-abortion. But we've put the law into motion, and there's a trajectory that makes it hard to undo without potential unintended consequences. So I'm not going to say that 12 weeks is, I don't know what viable is. To me as a Christian, I'm just going to say that maybe the government shouldn't have the choice, but culturally, spiritually, and philosophically, for me personally, to have a black mother, a black grandmother, black sisters, that we failed as a black community, one, but we failed as an American culture that women would choose abortion. Mm-hmm. So there's two separate things to go on there, I think.
One of the two most important questions that were asked to Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, what is a woman? She said she couldn't provide a definition.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is absolutely absurd. She was also asked...
Then it's not a celebration that she's become a Supreme Court justice at that point.
Right.
But go ahead.
The other question
if she doesn't know what a woman is, then why are we celebrating that a black woman is the Supreme Court justice?
Exactly.
Yeah.
The other question was about when life begins. We need to have... We need to the best of our abilities, try and quantify the world around us so that we can create effective policy and help protect people and grant them civil rights. If we can't define a phrase, we can't protect it.
I agree.
So in the instance of abortion and what is a woman, the reason, in my opinion, the left won't give you a definition, they'll say, I don't know when life begins, maybe after birth or something. They have no clearly defined point, is because that way they can't do moral wrong.
Right.
Because if you say life begins at conception, it's a moral wrong at any point.
Moral relativism. Yeah, that's the linchpin of their whole ideology.
Now they're saying after birth, and it's just like that way they can have late-term abortions. They say, what is a woman? Oh, I can't answer that, because then you can sort of massage various institutions in this country. I think it's easily defined in terms of what they're doing. If a judge can't tell you what a woman is, but then in the same meet in the same hearing within only a few minutes say Roe v. Wade is important. It protects a woman's right to terminate
her
pregnancy.
It's completely absurd.
You can't use the word woman in that sentence with when you can't even define what it is.
See, but what
whenever it empowers them.
Yeah, what you're doing is you're debunking a logical fallacy, and you do it well. I watch you often. I'm a secret fan.
I appreciate it, man.
You're one of the best in the business at debunking a logical fallacies. I really enjoy it.
But I'm just trying to understand.
No, but there's no.
Tell me the rules.
There are no rules.
I know.
Let's just say what it is. They don't care about the logic.
Right.
They don't care because the logic to disavow yourself from the logos, which is a Christian idea, right? The logos. To disavow yourself and detach yourself from the logos is to give yourself carte blanche to apply morals and ethics however you see fit, when you see fit, advantageous in most cases for you to be cruel and predatory and immoral. And let's just draw a hard line. Inception. At inception. If you abort a child, you...
Conception,
I'm sorry. Yeah, conception. If you abort a child, you take the innocence of a child.
Well,
that's a grave sin.
The debate would be, it is alive. I kind of agree that it's life when it's conceived, but is it? When does it become human?
Conception.
Well, hey, you didn't let him answer. You answered for him.
Oh, I thought you were speaking general.
The only reason I pause is because when I think of human, I wouldn't accept the premise that the goal on the left is to even properly identify or outline what human is, like he's saying. And I think that in general, they have a very anti-human spirit. And this abortion thing is part and parcel of it. So I wouldn't even accept the premise that they are in any way concerned with the idea of humans or humanity. They're not.
Let me ask you a question.
They actually think human life in general, it can be deduced down to suffering and uncertainty.
It's kind of like they're at war. I think you're saying mental war, like mental siege. People really feel like they're at war, so they're acting like it. And like, you want to talk about taking life? If you feel like you're at war, there are no rules.
Let me ask you a question, Ian. Do you have a soul?
I believe it's not mine, but I believe there's an energy field around me that I would consider my soul or a soul that is my soul. You know?
Do you feel it?
Sometimes.
You
feel the heat.
You
feel it moving through me.
You feel that there is some kind of energy within you that is intrinsic to you, or I was thinking about this because
God, buddy.
But check this out.
Magnetic vibration or something. Man.
It's a higher power.
I've talked to people who've said no. I say, do you have a soul? And they say, I don't believe in that. No, I don't. And for a long time, I thought they just don't believe, or maybe they don't know the things I know. And then I thought about, I'm like, maybe people who genuinely don't feel that, they really don't have one. I'm not saying it's a moral judgment of the person.
No, I get what you're saying.
I'm saying like...
That's an existential bomb right there.
Right, they do, but they're sensationally muted to it.
Maybe their connection is muted or whatever. But I was just thinking about this because there's a psychological phenomenon of projection. We assume the people we talk with know the things we know. We assume they believe the things we do. And if they don't, if they say otherwise, they must be lying. If I say I know Trump is crooked and then someone else says no, he's not, they must be lying because everyone knows. They project only what they can sense of themselves.
Yeah.
Thinking about that, I was like, I mean, I've had experiences that I can only describe as like visions and epiphanies and feelings.
Metaphysical.
Metaphysical, perhaps indescribable in some ways, that give me the feeling of I have a soul and there is a God. I'm not theistic. I don't believe in scripture or Bibles or anything like that. I just feel like there's a greater power. And I've had experiences in my life. I've felt things. And then I thought about, well, if someone tells me they've never experienced and they don't feel it, maybe it's not that they're cut off or that either of us are wrong. It's that they genuinely don't have that. Maybe it's just that simple. And
maybe,
I could project what
so
I feel
just
on them.
Not yeah. Everybody has it. So then the idea is that it does exist, but that not everyone has it.
Some people are NPCs.
That was the Aiden Paladin did a great video
yeah.
where she talks about how that's like a...
That's the Matrix motif.
Yeah, she talks about a study about some people just don't have an inner monologue.
Yeah,
right. Yeah.
That's right.
Or I'll give a spiritual scenario. Maybe the aggregation of sin across time has deadened the spiritual connection at mass, and that some individuals unexpectedly and completely randomly are born without a spiritual connection. But my response to that would be to say that individuals can be brought back as a Christian. Individuals can be brought back into faith and grace when introduced and practicing. That there is a physical way to practice to become reconnected to the
spirit. Clear the amyloid plaque off your brain.
I have a crazy idea. Ian, you're going to love it.
Thanks.
I have a crazy idea. I was just, you know, thinking about DMT, and I'm absolutely fascinated by it. That's why I think, you know, Joe Rogan's fascinated. That's why people talk about it so often. Because you hear these stories from, say, from anybody, prominent stories that they're entities, machine elves or beings. You take DMT, meet them, you blast off, or you go beyond the veil, as it's been described. And you meet beings who will tell you secrets, who will tell you things or make deals with you or whatever. Some are evil, some are not. I started thinking about that, and I'm like, if DMT is naturally occurring in your brain, then are you really dreaming, or are you getting a small glimpse of the window beyond the veil? Of course, DMT makes people force right through it. The spirit molecule or whatever, as they describe it. What if some people don't produce enough to create a strong connection with whatever is beyond the veil?
That makes a lot of sense.
Some people produce a lot more, so they naturally have a deep connection to some kind of...
Alex Jones.
Mm-hmm. And maybe, either extreme can be pretty rough.
But what
I like this idea, I do.
People who are deeply spiritual, who can feel that, that feeling within them of a soul or a spirit, people who can visualize, who can just come up with beautiful works of art, they've got some kind of connection to a vast network beyond them. Now, maybe this is just an idea. I'm not saying it's true. I'm saying, considering we're exploring what DMT is, we're doing this research now, and there's interesting things about it. What if that was it? Some people just naturally produce more, and that connects them better with, you know, something greater than us, and some people don't, so they can't sense or feel it.
There's been conspiracy theory that fluoride calcifies the pineal gland. You guys ever hear that theory? It's been around for 20 years or something. I've read about it. I don't know for sure if it actually does, but
sounds like internet mumbo jumbo.
Might
to me.
Be, but
here's one.
That's where the DMT
fluoride
is produced.
Is a neurotoxin,
and the pineal gland is where the DMT is produced. In the brain, I think your muscles produce it too. Your stomach, even maybe. I think
here's one. I know from being on anti-anxiety medication such as fluoxetine, which is Prozac, which is one of the most prescribed, prescribed drugs in the world, in America, let's say. But it's all of the SSRIs, the serotonin selective reuptake inhibitors, are proven to bring testosterone down. Mm. So there are, I mean, what we're putting into our body can't be dismissed out of hand as the overall effect it's having on society. But the question is how much of that has been intentionally engineered?
And that's like, you were talking soul earlier. Now, I don't know if that's soul, if we're talking soul, if you're just talking about your ability to function normally, but I have, you know, we were talking earlier about substance abuse and absolutely SSRIs, whether you're talking Xanax, Prozac, anything from those families, mine is with opiates, any of those dulls your senses. And if we're talking about your ability to feel the world around you, which, you know, whether you're talking your soul, whatever that is, your ability to understand and feel the world as it happens to you is deadened and is quieted by those chemicals. And then you have to talk about whether that was intentionally done into the into our communities. If it was done, you know, certain people are going to have brain imbalances. I was on Prozac when I was younger. Eventually went off it and had took a lot of years to get off of everything entirely.
Yeah.
I tell this story a lot. Like the first time when I realized that I could go outside without going through any withdrawal symptoms, I cried for like maybe the first time in 10, 15 years, not because nothing sad had happened to me before that, but just because there was no actual reason or way for my body to process trauma before that. So if you're talking about coming back to the world, that was the first time in a lot of years I'd felt like soul was a real thing.
I know that pain. It feels like when you have that level of mental, you know, mental health struggles, anxiety, depression, when there are moments when you're with yourself and you really can identify that fog.
Yeah.
That you're living in a fog.
It is a fog.
It's and like when you come out of it, it's like, whoa. Then you really realize, like, that was really a deep fog I was in. I just think that there's a spiritual component to it, like you're laying out. And, you know, here's my thing. I think where we're going with science, where we're headed with science by and large at this global, you know, science technocratic behest is more leaning towards anti-human attitude, and not trying to use this science to really and genuinely figure out the link between us and the spiritual world. I don't think that that's what this transhuman movement is about. I think this transhuman movement is to phase people out altogether because they're nihilistic about the value of humanity.
I thought Greg Braden is a good scientist that seems to be on the right path. He has acknowledged a lot of, like, he's not into that stuff, but he understands, like, the power of the heart and the electromagnetic frequency that it produces and stuff. He's really fascinating.
Many scientists have written about the next iteration of life beyond self-replicating proteins and multicellular organisms is self-replicating machines that can outlive all of us. So I read this one story about what year 1 million would look like. And it basically said that all human life and all life has been wiped off of Earth, but there are self-replicating massive machines that float around the universe, taking millions or billions of years to travel to the next energy deposit, absorb it, and then replicate itself.
Yeah, it's just it's offensive.
And that's it?
As a Christian, it offends me.
Dude.
I mean, that conception of life or just any conception of a future where humanity no longer, that's not arrogance. That's to understand and appreciate the divine gift that God has given humanity, being human. And any conception where we try and justify our role and the destruction of humanity is a heresy and a blasphemy against God. It offends me.
It feels like we figured out how to hack our brains as humans. Our brains expanded to a point where we figured out how to make them expand faster. So we accelerated the expansion, kind of like kicking a fusion generator on. And now we're just so exceedingly evolved relative to other animals on Earth. It's really unique.
I think there's one way to look at it. Look, Metaverse, we've been harping on for the past couple of weeks. It's coming. Now, a lot of people say, you know, Tim, Metaverse is not popular. Yeah. Mark Zuckerberg's is not popular. But when Neuralink can plug your brain in, I see it like there are many powerful individuals who wish they could just make you do something, but they can't. You have rights and you have physical control of your body. So they can come at you and say, do it or else. And you can say no. And then what do? Get some guys. Oh, man. How about we can't be gods? But if we plug everyone into the metaverse, now you can be. Now you can cut off their finances. Now you can eliminate them from the server. Just you're outright banned. If everyone willfully goes into the metaverse, you can be banned from it. And now you're not participating in the economy, in the information network, in society in any way.
Terms and conditions.
Absolutely. And also in the metaverse, they can also be like, we're going to make your voice half as loud. We're going to make everyone the same height. Everyone will have to do as they're told. And if I'm the owner, if you're Mark Zuckerberg, you can be sitting in this metaverse public square and someone comes in and says, I need to tell everybody about this oil spill. And he goes, and you're gone. That's what he's been doing. Maybe not necessarily him personally, but Facebook has been purging
big tech,
political ideas.
Yeah.
Because we already exist in a digital space in terms of our political conversations, big tech has already shown us what they will do if given more power over it.
You know, I was thinking about
the most dangerous thing. It's the biggest existential threat to humanity, in my opinion.
Becoming a god in that universe. It's like, would you want to become a god in someone else's universe where they control your godhood? I don't know. But it's kind of like growing up in the United States. You're like, in the United States, you can, the American dream, you can grow up and become everything you ever wanted. You can become a billionaire, but you're still in their universe. If the U.S. government wants to shut you down and cut you out of SWIFT and drop a bomb on your house, they have the legal authority to do it. So you're a god in, Elon Musk is a god in their universe right now. So how's it different? So they're creating a fractal of that with the metaverse. It's another authoritarian thing where you get the illusion of being God if you work hard enough and play by the rules.
The more they expand, the more they push our lives into digital spaces, the more rights you will lose, and you better be ready to fight for those rights because they're going to keep defaulting on it's a private business. You don't have to be in it. But right now,
that's one of the biggest scams. Socialism, That's socialism masquerading as being anti-corporate, but at the global scale, socialism actually becomes the highest level of corporation. And that's what the progressive left is really trying to do in their political strategy is say, you know, the Bernie Sanders crowd and you know, my Steve, who I love, you know, dearly, he gives Bernie his credit for, you know, some of his positions, but I see Bernie's position and AOC and these people is not being anti-corporate. I see that they're in on the game to merge government and state. State and corporation at the global level and thus usher in the serfdom, which I know Steve has talked to and agrees with too. But them saying they're anti-corporate is just a problem with the premise that socialism, the problem with the premise is that the state already isn't the highest form of government. The highest form of corporation. Many people don't see the state as a corporation.
And it is. It's an organ. I don't care if you call it a corporation, a government, or whatever. Organizations.
Yeah.
Hierarchical organizations that have control, that have power, that can exert that power.
They want to make us serfs and slaves. And why would we believe that megalomaniacs wouldn't have the ambition to domineer, lesser individuals? I mean, that just adds up 1, 2, 3.
Yeah, government's a type of corporation, but the capital C is a different type of, that's an official corporation.
These big tech companies are going to offer you your wildest dreams to plug your brain into their networks. They've already done it. We're getting close. You can go online. You can make your profile picture whatever you want to be. That's giving a lot of people some satisfaction. Catfishing, for instance, is ridiculous. Some people just want to do it.
Scary.
But they're going to come with the Neuralink and the metaverse, and they're going to say, you can be a pirate captain. Just install this chip, and you will be the pirate captain. You also have to have a job and everything, but play these games. You go in, they own you. Ready Player One.
Well, it's weird. What's strange to me is how many people, and I guess, it's not shocking to me because I was the guy 10 years ago saying the mental health epidemic is here and it's going to get worse. And people were like, mainstream liberal, writers and journalists were going, what do you mean everybody's suffering from mental illness? I'm like, what do you mean? What do I mean? Huh. I mean, the evidence is clear, but I see this whole Ready Player One scenario is being more dangerous than people think on a practical level very soon because the Neuralink situation, for example, nobody, if you're not going to own anything but be happy, that means you're certainly not going to own your Neuralink. You're going to be leasing it.
That's right.
And if you're leasing it, that means they own it. That means now they own a piece of your brain.
I think what will have to happen to make Neuralink a thing is they'll need to be able to wirelessly connect you. So assuming it's possible, I don't know if it is. Right now, what they're doing with Neuralink is they have these very thin, metal, I guess you'd call them cables, I suppose.
Yeah, threads, maybe.
Threads that lightly tap into the brain and then track data. And they've hooked them up to, I think, pigs to track their vitals and stuff like that.
They cut up in like a quarter-sized circle, and then they sew these threads into like just under the top layer of the brain. That was about a year ago. That's where the tech was at.
So it looks like what we have right now is basic read-only. If we're getting to the point where you can read and write into a brain, allowing you to have experiences, that means there's going to have to be a calibration for your brain because everyone's brain's different. We don't have one human code. It's everyone's brain has different amounts of, chemicals in it or whatever. But getting to that point, I think implants aren't going to work. It's going to have to be something you can wear on your head that it wirelessly projects things into your mind, which I'm not sure is possible. But the idea that people are going to go and get fitted with surgery to have something, I don't see as being realistic.
A lot of people aren't going to want that surgery. Unless they create an economic situation where to not do it would be so...
like a cell phone.
Would make you so disadvantaged that you feel left out of society. Many people will do many things to feel a sense of belonging to the society around them.
That's
getting your testicles or penis cut off because you think you feel like a woman.
Is there any job you can work right now if you don't have a cell phone? I'm sure it's not absolute. There are some, but almost
some. Like factory jobs and stuff.
But they're going to be like
post-COVID is getting shortened.
They're going to be like, I tried calling you. Where were you? You weren't answering your phone. Yeah, and you're like, I don't have a cell phone. They're going to be like, what? Why?
You're not allowed to not be available all the time now. You have to always be able to answer your phone. Otherwise, they're going to say, well, why don't you have one? Makes no sense.
I'll tell you this, though. If we get to the point where they can do read-write into your brain, but you'll need a surgical implant, I'll tell you this. If they went right now and said, Neuralink is available, it's a surgical implant, it costs $2,000, lasts you for life, and you can physically experience X-Men, Skyrim, Elden Ring, whatever, you're
going to
have millions of young men outright being like, save me from this. I don't want to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. This sucks. I don't know about young women. Because what we see with Instagram, they're much more motivated by, social behaviors. Men would be like, just get me away from it. I don't want to deal with it anymore.
A lot of gameplay footage on YouTube, and one of the guys that I watch in particular is like, sign me up. Number one. I'm first in line. Get me in there. Because he's games for a living.
That's right.
The whole problem with this is that we've created a culture where people don't see any value in suffering or hard work or
that's right.
You know, and as an athlete, it just offends me. I just can't get beyond it. It's offensive. I'm like, guys,
I hear you, bro.
You have to love the process of working hard, putting some sweat and some time and some energy and commitment into something and seeing the result. That's beautiful.
I think, like, along with what you were saying, Brett, that the love, the joy that is lost when you're medicated.
Yeah.
Like, I just for the first time saw this article from The Guardian. Microplastics found in human blood for first time. This is from like 4 days ago.
Hmm.
You talk about like being drugged by our own refuse. I don't know if you consider that a drug at this point, but if it's in your blood and it's not a food, then.
But also it's the narrative that it's not worth it anymore. There's a lot of that going on, that no matter how hard you work, you know, your parents bought a house when they were 26 and they each worked a part-time job and paid for college. And the idea is now that no matter how hard you work, the system is rigged against you, and hard work is actually seen as a negative because it's almost like you're a sucker. You're buying into the system.
I think they want you to feel that way.
That's what I'm saying. Want you. That's a narrative that they've spun very, very well.
Corporations want you dependent, so you buy their products. Government wants you dependent, so you give them their votes. The last thing they want is for someone to be like, I don't need anything from you. I can go. I think one of the things that greatly benefits me throughout life is that I don't really have anything to lose. Now, granted, if I have a family, that's where they get people. You know, they go after your family, your kids, your wife, or otherwise. But for me, it's like, yo, I've experienced hardship to the point where it doesn't scare me.
Yeah.
Without anything left to lose, you have the opportunity to explore and then eventually stumble upon better opportunities, take bigger risks, and go for these things. They want you to feel like if you lose your job, you're screwed, you're done, your life is over. That's not true.
Well, and that's the motif. Again, from a spiritual standpoint, that's the motif of heaven collapsing for people. When heaven collapses for you, the idea of a heaven, of a paradise, of something to look forward to, all you have left is the here and now, which makes all your action and your entire, that creates anxiety and despair, because the here and now is fleeting, and we all know it. We grow up knowing it. We were born with the intuition that the here and now is going to be short. And potentially cruel and unfair. And yeah, that would make somebody anxious and depressed.
And then we get into dopamine hits and instant gratification and the fact that people don't live for farther out. They're living just from one hit to the other, whether it's social media, whether it's drugs.
But they don't see it. They don't see it as a lot of people don't see it as a sort of, if you created, put up on the screen somebody who was just addicted to crack, right? And they just couldn't help to have to do crack, and just how that desperation will look on a TV screen. People who are using social media and this tech this way don't see themselves in that regard at all.
Nope.
I read this article in a skateboard magazine as a kid. I could be misremembering, but it was called What Now? And Brett will totally get this because you skate. Well, you blade, but this was a skateboarding magazine, but same thing in this regard. It said, you're a skateboarder and you've decided to do some kind of trick down a set of stairs and you fight for it. And you fail. And you try again and you fail and you fail and you fail. And every time you fail, you're getting frustrated, you're getting tired. Maybe you leave, maybe you come back. But sooner or later, you land that trick.
Mm.
And for a few seconds, it feels really, really good.
It's the greatest feeling in the world.
But then a few seconds later, it's gone and you think, what now?
Mm.
You chase after this thing that you can never actually hold on to. And I think, you know, one of the things that's greatly benefited me in life is skateboarding. Because I've always known that. I've always known there is no such thing as more. There's just doing.
That's why I like making movies over making theater. I used to do a lot of theater, and it was lost. After the show was done, there was no record of it, and I forgot how I felt when I was doing it. But, man, when you record it on a camera, it's there forever.
But it's the feeling.
It's the feeling in the moment, because we film all the tricks that we do.
Yeah,
but it's right. When you're done, you kind of... what
like
now?
I've done that. You don't get the same dopamine hit from doing the same thing as you did the first time you finally got it.
We would turn it into profiles where, like, I would plan out sections, like 20, 30 tricks out at different spots that I knew all of them. So you have a list of stuff to go down to, and then you get into editing. What song are you going to use? I would plan stuff out. I would timeline it so I knew this trick will be in slow motion here because this part of the song here. And that is part of a longer, more artistic process. But that's a beautiful thing that does work in a longer term sense than something that's more immediate. So it takes an immediate activity but makes it a much longer process.
I bring this up because think about this. If you're good at your craft And skateboarding is the easiest thing for me to use. You learn how to kickflip. It's a basic trick. You smack the board down, jump in the air, the board flips under your feet, you land it. You feel really, really good you finally did it. But eventually, it's second nature. You can just do it. Yeah, you feel good sometimes, you know, landing a really great kickflip. I've been doing kickflips for 2.5 decades. It does not feel the exact same. I remember the first heel flip I ever landed. I fought for it. And after a couple of weeks, I was getting them perfect, and I'm like, this is amazing. You know, I earned this. And every new trick I learned was a struggle and a battle, and I had to figure it out. And it's still true to this day when I skate or blade. But imagine you're in the metaverse. That's gone.
Yep.
You will just literally click, and you've got it.
Nothing tactile about it.
Imagine how insane you'll go chasing after a dragon when you're 1,000 times faster at reaching these milestones than you would have been.
Your brain's going to fry.
Exactly.
People are going to go insane.
Yep.
So clinically, like schizophrenic. Psychosis insane.
I think you will be surprised.
That's the mental health crisis I had the intuition toward 10 years ago.
They're on antidepressants when they go in. I mean, imagine how
you're gonna
struggle that could be.
When people live in the metaverse, you know, they'll still have to come out. Eventually, in a couple decades, there'll be a dude wearing a corn costume, juggling corn as he rides a corn unicycle. And you're like, what is this? And in his personal metaverse, he has constantly chased after something that's evolved into some weird corn reality. And it seems ridiculous because you're like, how could someone go from being a regular person to being, you know, this like corn juggling corn suit guy? Yeah. Because in the metaverse, the distance between dopamine hits is microscopic compared to the real world. And you can reach infinite levels of pushing your brain into crazy ass places.
It'll disconnect you from reality really fast. I mean, I already,
but they believe, I think a lot of these technocrats that sit above our society right now really believe that if they push the human, first of all, they have a hyperinflated sense of their own cognitive ability, I believe. And they believe that if they push the human mind to that point, that there's some evolution on the other side that's going to be, you know, a paradise of sorts. It's just naive. It's naive. It's reckless. At minimum, it's naive and reckless. It could be malicious too.
And it's like you will end up losing it because, like, I've done, like, you talk mental health. I had a whole series of videos where I would do skating segments, 1 minute a day of different tricks, and I would do a voiceover segment where I would talk about what I was going through, either to film those tricks or what I was going through that day. And one of the segments that would continually reoccur is days where I got stuck on my phone and I get doom scrolling through whether it's Twitter or TikTok or Facebook or Instagram. Mm-hmm. Thank God most of those are gone. All I have is Instagram now. Like, and I would say, I was like, I have to get out of the house. I have to go into the physical world and go do something that requires tactile function. Yeah. And then I would be like, I would feel 10,000 times better in a way that no drug could have ever done, all just by going outside and feeling my physical, you know, being in the world.
I just want to let everybody know that almost every day I go out and tear up some grass with my hand and then feed it to the chickens. Mm. So it's like people tweeted me like, touch grass, Tim. It's like, yo, I have chickens. You can hear me yelling on our Chicken City stream. I'm like, chickens!
But it's back to that physical world.
Yep.
Keeping yourself anchored in that physical world.
I mean, I just like yelling at chickens.
I think the trees.
Not like me yelling, but just like, you know, like getting their attention and waving at them or something.
Andrew Huberman was saying every human should look outside for 15 minutes a day into the horizon. It's just something that fixes the, he's a neuroscientist and he says it's really, really good.
The things that solve my anxiety, I'm just going to say, as a prescription to people who are dealing with that radical anxiety and depression, the things that helped me resolve my anxiety, were truth and gratitude.
Yeah.
I think we're first, there's an attack on truth, universal truth, the logos, like I said, but also gratitude solves a lot of these things, right? Well, like my concept of getting to the round of 32 and playing the Anthony Davis in Kentucky and losing, but playing a good game and they go on to win. And I could think back and go, well, what do I need to, but there's a moment in there in that whole, you know, paradigm of thought where you could go, man, I'm grateful for the opportunity to even have done that. Yeah. I played in front of 16,000 people, a million people on television. I played well. My team. I'm grateful first, gratitude first, and then the pursuit of other things is a good model.
It's the same, like I said, like before I came to work here, I was working at a small apartment complex. I couldn't drive, didn't have any way of getting around. I just skated every day and worked. and just being sober, just knowing that I should surely be dead by now, that there's no reason for me to be here. If, you know, for 99% of people had done the things I had done, wouldn't have made it out alive. I got lucky and I was blessed to do that, and have just infinite gratitude for the fact that I was walking and alive and healthy. And a lot of people can't seem to manage to find that when they're, you know, you have to look not just where you're going, but where you came from. And if where you came from was something so debilitatingly awful, that you need to look at where you are now.
You choose to be happy.
Yeah.
You know, some people don't. I'm not saying, you know, depression and mental illness don't exist. Definitely not. I'm saying for a lot of people, I hear these stories and they just talk about how their life's so miserable. And I'm just like, when you wake up, you really, it's within you to be grateful and happy and to look for, you know, look for the good or look for the bad.
And more particularly, it's up to you to choose what food you put in your stomach, because that's going to drastically alter your state
of mind. That's true, too. That's one of the first things I always say.
I just want to point out, man, like when we order a bunch of pizza and then I just eat several slices.
You feel like shit?
Feel bad.
Yeah. When I eat like...
Simple enough, huh? You know, what food do you put in your body?
It really, really matters. You know, I guess it doesn't matter when you're younger, you don't care, but... Today we had I had lettuce wraps.
I think it does matter.
And I feel fantastic.
I bet if a lot of young people had really healthy diets, they wouldn't be as crazy.
Check this out. We did ground beef, peppers, onions, cheese, and when I was walking out to throw grass to the chickens, we have wild chives growing because they sprout up all over the place. Just grabbed a whole bunch of them, rinsed them off.
What'd you have? Where's this at? You didn't offer me any.
It was before you got here.
Oh, okay. It's some leftover. I know. We're going to go find it when we're
there
done.
There might be. Yeah, you want.
I definitely do. The way you made it sound.
It's good. You just take some of the mixture, you put it on some lettuce, and then I've ordered some truffle mayo. It's, you know, it's so good.
Always
and,
good.
I feel fantastic. We got to go to Super Chats, though.
It is time.
If you haven't already, smash that like button. Support the show. Head over to timcast.com to become a member if you want to support us directly. And share the show whenever you can. It really, really does help. Let's grab some of these here. Super Chats. What do we got here? Nobody Special says, Tim, what did you think of the Batman deleted Joker scene? I thought, wow, that movie would have been could have actually been worse. Yikes. Do you guys see that?
The scene is beautifully shot. Absolutely fantastic.
Sure,
shot beautifully. I don't really like Barry Keoghan as Joker. I think they should leave the Joker off the ballot for at least 5 movies. They don't need to keep going back to that character.
They have no idea what they're doing with these movies. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, please, like, they're just beating Batman to death. And I'm like, stop. Just stop. There's so much good writing in the Batman comics, and they just keep just pulverizing. It's like,
yeah, Bane did such a good job, they just can't stop.
And they keep overusing Batman anyways. I think he's overused.
Totally.
63% of DC comics are all, you know, almost every DC like survives on Bat Family sales. So
Iron Man too, man. It's
can I just throw in that I really would appreciate if they redid the Green Lantern and made a decent movie out of
John Stewart Green Lantern.
That original Ryan Reynolds, and I like Ryan Reynolds, but that Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern movie was
he doesn't like that movie
absurd.
Either.
I know he does. I bet he doesn't.
No.
That was completely absurd.
Have you seen The Adam Project?
No.
It's on Netflix. I thought it was good. I don't think it was Lord of the Rings or anything. You know, I give it a C+, B-.
We reviewed it. I loved it. I was like, to me, it's one of those things where movies today are so, I'm so hyper-focused on hating the agenda that gets driven into most of these films, that when I just get like a general family film with nothing offensive label as far as like agenda being just shoved into it, I'm like, that was fantastic. So like 10 years ago, it would have been like a B- or a C+. I'm like, A-. Yeah, that was fantastic.
This is a really good super chat, actually. Rilo says, if Ketanji Brown Jackson can't define woman, how can she define the 19th Amendment? The reason why that's a really good question is the 19th Amendment affirms a woman's right to vote. But if a trans woman is a woman,
boom,
then women already have the right to vote.
Yeah. Boom. Yep. Get rid of it.
Would you lose the right to vote if you transitioned? You wouldn't.
I think that really interesting. We need to make trans woman a word and trans men a word, I guess, because they're just different things than man and woman. Trans man, trans woman, they're just different things. They're different definitions. Let's go with it. Move on.
So it says, the right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. That's very interesting. That means, the amendment doesn't actually say man or woman. Which would mean that, based on today's logic, women always had the right to vote.
Mm-hmm. Which means that the entire suffrage movement, where the neoliberal women went to black women and said, hey, the black man got the right to vote before you did, let's go after him. Yeah. That goes out the window. The suffrage movement is
they don't talk about that.
Takes
they,
a hit.
Yeah,
right
they, there. They don't want you to know about that.
Oh, that the white woman went, that black man got the right to vote before
that,
I did.
That racism played a big role in the suffrage movement.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I think women should have the right to vote.
Absolutely.
Everybody should, but definitely. And Planned Parenthood, racism played a huge role in the formation of Planned Parenthood. You know what, man? It's funny that they say the truth is right wing. Or, I'm sorry, they're effectively saying it. They'll call you a liar.
Yeah.
They'll say you're right wing. But if you tell the truth, they'll call you right wing. They'll call you conservative, even if you're not.
Yeah, I don't know.
Welcome to the modern era.
I don't even know where the political spectrum's all over the place now. You know that. I mean, there's plenty of people who are traditionally liberal who have just been pushed over to the right wing by default by a far left manic.
Or the right wing has been pulled to encompass people who are liberal.
Yeah.
I would have been considered a disaffected liberal who became more libertarian, at least more like, minimize the state, just by being pulled this way. Through the just how far left the rest of the agenda is that I've just been moved that way, and then since then have grown and learned and changed my positions in certain areas, but definitely would have never been considered right wing or Republican or conservative. Just not.
They're calling me the alt right now.
Yeah. Alt right. It's so
I'm
alt right. No. But my favorite is only white people can be racist, but Candace Owens is a white supremacist.
Yes.
Wow.
It's just whatever.
I love
man.
That one. That's
all
great.
Right. Glyph Zero says, here's to some conditioner for Ian, should cover inflation on it for a week.
Thank you. I use conditioner that is for infants, by the way.
Oh,
I treat my hair nice.
Baby shampoo.
Yeah.
All right. David, what does it say? David C. Kronk Sr. I find it interesting that the United States has placed economic sanctions on Russia during this invasion that we never placed on Hitler during World War II. We are forcing our own economic demise. I'd like to point out that Joe Biden said we were going to disseminate food shortages.
Yeah.
And then he also said the food shortages are going to be the result of sanctions, and he's the one who pushed these sanctions. So it's kind of like maybe he was telling the truth about disseminating food shortages.
Yep.
Yeah, maybe.
It's American policy that's leading to it. All right. Mickey Stone says, U.S. generals are negotiating with Chinese officials trading Taiwan for Russia in Australia right now. I have a reliable friend in the ADF. That is a bold claim. Maybe we'll see something about that, but I don't know, man. I am skeptical on those internet claims, that evidence. That'd be crazy, though. Considering that Joe Biden's talking about ramping up production, chip production in the U.S., the U.S. seems to be ready to lose Taiwan.
Mm-hmm. Long overdue. One of the things he's getting right.
Yeah.
In theory.
Absolutely, yeah. Good credit where credit's due. Raymond G. Stanley Jr. says all roads seem to lead to white liberal women.
Mm, yep.
It's suburban white women who voted for Joe Biden. You know, they were the big swing.
There was a sign in my neighborhood when I was still living in West St. Paul that said, vote for Kamala Harris, .. and Joe Biden.
Huh, interesting.
So they weren't even voting for him then. They were voting for her for vice president, and then I guess we'll take Joe as president just because.
Howard says, in a big super chat, thanks very much, respect your getting closer guy, a good job.
Huh.
Is that reference? Sure. Anybody? No? Nothing? Closer guy, a good job? Getting
nope.
A,
I'm assuming he means me.
I don't know.
Because I assume you meant me.
I don't know.
I don't know anything about that. Let's find out.
So
NSX
curious.
Says, this man talks like a stoic paladin. I can't vote, Australian, but you have my prayers.
Very cool.
Thank you.
Are you familiar with the paladin?
No,
from
I'm
Dungeons
not.
And Dragons, the warrior of God.
Yeah,
he uses divine energy to protect his allies.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
You
have an aura of healing. It's good.
I've never been called defensive that. Aura. I'm usually called pretty radical. Maybe you guys calm me down. I appreciate you guys allowed me to be comfortable to have a nice, calm conversation. I get theatrical.
All right. Dragon Lady says, Tim, I live in Toledo area where the Floyd mural was. It was not partly cloudy that day. Rained off and on all day. Massive storm rolled in at the time of the lightning strike. Sky was dark, pouring rain, high winds, much lightning. I watched it. Fantastic storm.
Huh.
Interesting. I'm still wondering how the roof wasn't damaged and only George Floyd was blown off the side of the building.
Crazy.
God's wrath.
I'm gonna go with metal in the paint. That's my
answer. The whole wall was painted.
Whatever they used on his face was like
a special paint
lead
just for
or
him.
Something. Yeah, maybe.
I want to say something real quick about George Floyd. Okay. This guy doesn't, to say that the state has gone too far or that we always have to be mindful of the authority and scope of governance as citizens is not the same to enshrine him as a hero, although I know that some people may think he's a hero. And looking at the situation where he was involved in the home invasion and put the gun to a pregnant woman's stomach, which I don't know if that's a
true story.
I thought that was debunked. Was it? Is
I
debunked?
Thought that was debunked. That I could be wrong on that. Somebody would have to
maybe
check
it was.
I thought that at least the part about him holding the gun to a pregnant woman's belly. I heard that was debunked.
I'm just saying that what I want people on both sides to do is separate. Am I a Roman citizen? Do you have the right to bind and beat a Roman citizen who has not been convicted of a crime? Mm-hmm. And George Floyd, regardless of who he was in his life, has a right to have a trial. And he had a family. He has a humanity regardless of what he had done. So
agreed.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is why I'm actually a fan of bail reform. I think there's problems with it. You see what happens in New York when repeat offenders just keep getting let go and crimes keep happening. So there's got to be a way to stop that for sure. But I don't like the idea that you could be poor, get accused of a crime, let alone, you know, not even proven to have done anything wrong, and they can say, we can lock you up for an extended period of time. That means you're going to lose your job. You'll probably get evicted. People will wonder where you went. It'll be hard to communicate. I'm like, no. I think about Kyle Rittenhouse, for example. What did he spend? Almost 3 months in jail. Yeah. Only for the state to finally come out and
tyranny.
What, yep. Right. There's video evidence. It was clear cut. He should have been in and out of court. The cops should have looked at that. The DA should have been like, but instead, because of politics, they were like, let's lock him up for a while.
DA's in on it.
Kyle Rittenhouse, if he was going to be locked up by the state, should have been given a, let's just say 4-star hotel, not 5-star, but you should have a nice accommodation because you're not convicted of any crime. If the state wants to hold you, you should be held in complete median middle class standards. Instead, they put you in jail with everybody else. You lose your job. Now you got to have internet. You should be allowed to use the phone at your own discretion. Internet access. You've done no wrong. Why can't you communicate at least? If they've not, I understand saying, look, we have reason to believe you committed a crime, so we're going to be holding you. But because we don't want you to commit another crime or hurt somebody, but there's no reason you can't talk to your family or get access to the internet, right?
Right.
No, I'm not a fan of locking people up, because what happens is a lot of cops use the process as the punishment. They say, I know that I can get you 2 days in jail if I arrest you right now for any reason I make up or say.
Yeah.
So in New York, you have cops, they often do this. They'll arrest someone because it's like it's easier just to deal with arresting a protester otherwise. Send them to the station, let them stew over the weekend. They'll get out, charge will be dropped, but it took care of the problem in the short term. I think that's terrible. Mm-hmm. The state should not be allowed to do this, but hey, look, New York is run by Democrats who appoint Democrat cops who do these things to themselves, and I don't live there anymore for that reason.
And it's not just the Democrat. That's a bipartisan problem, I think.
Definitely.
The prison system and the criminal justice system, but the prison system primarily, is the lowest rung of the military-industrial complex. Law enforcement and police are the second lowest rung, and it goes up to geopolitical warfare and conflict after that.
And when we were downstairs talking, the first thing I mentioned to you is like, and the Minneapolis Police Department has always been known as being extremely corrupt. And we knew that from the beginning that was always a problem.
There's a cultural consensus for people who live in Minnesota about the police department there.
Yep, yeah. Absolutely.
All right. Jay says, I agree with Ian. Despair is strong right now. While I don't have a path, I am still walking. Hope is never dead.
Mm-hmm. Keep walking. I think fixing your diet up is a big key of this path. You'll be okay.
I like this comment. Mike S. says, it is a travesty that this man is not a leader in this world. We need to replace the spineless cowards in the establishment with people like this. Thank you, sir, for running and good luck.
Thank you, brother.
I would just like to say, he is a leader in this world. You don't got to be in politics to be a leader. True. But, you know, having political power would be great if you had good leaders. You know what I mean?
There's been a dereliction of duty from people who are capable, let's say, of being transformative leaders in the political realm. And look, you know, I'm still 30 years old. I'm in the middle of a pro mixed martial arts career. My debut was on December 10th. I lost a 3-round decision.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I fought on LFA on the fight pass. Oh, yeah. So I've transitioned to pro mixed martial arts and I plan to continue to keep fighting, but none of our personal pursuits right now in this time of crisis should have us abnegate our duty to society. And that is the crux, I believe, of the fruit of an idea like nationalism. It puts constraints on the individual's ambitions, and it anchors us in charity in a Christian way and says the order of charity is local.
Do you have a podcast right now?
No, I don't.
That would be good.
Thank you.
So when you're talking about the order of charity being local, meaning that you want people to help out within their own community, and that's more important than people who start to rely on the state because they feel like they're not connected to a community.
No, yes, that too. But I mean that the order of charity and Greco-Judeo-Christian values is myself first, then my family, and then my immediate community. What the neoliberal globalist movement is trying to reorder the charity to say, send money for mosquito nets in Africa for malaria. And it's just so disconnected. Again, it makes it so people aren't anchored in the reality and facts and truth in their immediate life.
It's like those.
It's a trick. It's a three card Monty.
It's like those people who are like, I wish I could pay more taxes. Like
I would pay more. I don't mind paying taxes at the pump if it means that we help the Ukraine.
Yeah, that's
actually offensive.
And you can pay more taxes. I don't think the IRS can stop you from paying more, right?
It's like the white woman from the GQ. This is the perfect motif of the crisis in white liberal women is the woman who interviewed Jordan Peterson from the GQ magazine.
Yeah.
And
that interview is awful.
And he backs her into a corner and she tells us exactly what's wrong with the liberal ideology. He says, if you're so privileged and there's so many people who could benefit from what you have, why don't you give up your job?
Yeah.
And she just sits back and goes, no, I'm not going to do that.
That's Helen Lewis is her name.
Yeah. All right. Randy Devell says, get him on Joe Rogan. Great podcast. We need more men like this, Republicans and Democrats. Mm. Keep doing what you're doing. Proud Timcast member. Okay. Yes. And also Lily Tang Williams. But yes. That only happens if Joe knows who they are, because I certainly don't hit him up and be like, you know.
Alex Jones said the same thing when I was on his podcast. And shout out to Joe Rogan. I think what he's done is incredible. He stood in the breach, too. And, I'm a huge fan. I saw you first on Rogan. And then I started watching your stuff. So, yeah, shout out to Joe Rogan.
He's a good dude, man.
That's my...
Eternally grateful
to
Joe.
That's my N-word. I don't want to get you guys the episode brought down, but I love that Adesanya soundbite. That's my N-word. I love that.
All right, let's see. Chris Does Stuff says, Tim, have you had an out-of-body experience? No. Have you, Ian?
No. I've had lucid dreams where I was like flying around. I say, I'm flying, and then all of a sudden I'm flying and stuff like that.
I would say... There came a point in my life where basically every single dream I have is lucid.
Mm.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
What about you guys? Have you had out-of-body experiences?
My first panic attack came from smoking marijuana. Mm. And I just had – it was a massive panic attack. And I just was watching myself walk around. I thought I was going to die. And, you know, somehow I was able to call my grandfather. Came back. I didn't want to call my mom because where I'm from, your mom's beating you for sure. Grandpa was a little bit more amenable. So I called him. But I don't even remember how I was able to manage that because I was so disordered. And I was like watching myself walk around. So, yeah, anxiety attacks often feel like that.
Yeah.
So for lucid dreaming, just to clarify, there's techniques you can do. So there's something, I think it's called like walking into a dream or something like that. It's where you basically just use your imagination as you start to fall asleep and then basically trigger what the dream is or something like that. And there's also other things you're supposed to do. You keep a dream journal. You wear something consistently on your wrist or whatever that you check. That way when you're in a dream, it doesn't behave a certain way. You instantly get snapped out instantly become lucid. There's a bunch of things that I've done just like a long time ago that became second nature. And now it's like I'll fall asleep and then all of a sudden I'll be like, oh, I'm dreaming.
I was having a lucid dream and I knew I was awake, but I was asleep dreaming on a pirate ship. And I started to breathe out too much and the dream started to shake like Inception, like the entire reality started to rip apart. I was like, oh, it's an oxygenation issue or like a carbon dioxide issue. There's something about the breathing.
Yeah.
We need a dream master in here.
All right. Dawn's Herald says, in regard to the temptation of Neuralink, quote, the devil doesn't come dressed in a red cape and pointy horns. He comes as everything you've ever wished for.
That's what I thought.
Boom.
Yeah, dude. Life, you need, in the Matrix, I said this, humans need struggle. How boring is it if you just accomplished everything instantly overnight? You'd not be happy.
Yep.
You'd feel nothing.
So the rightful criticism of our system and establishment isn't that they've set up a society where people have to struggle in order to find meaning. It's that they've been predatory and corrupt and dishonest in how they've set the playing field and presented it as one that's fair and honest when really it's overtly corrupt. So that's my take on it.
All right. Darius Harvey, he just says, good show. Thanks for the super chat. Let's see. Carpe Diem, says, hats off to Lauren Southern for getting a ban on Twitch by replaying a debate she had with Destiny. Wait, really? Did that happen?
Destiny's banned.
Wow.
Life, I think.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
No, yeah. No. Twitch bans are like temporary. Everyone's always like, he got banned, he got banned.
Solidly banned, I think.
But he got banned before of the Kyle Rittenhouse thing, and then they let him back on. There was a good super chat I wanted to read. Oh, here we go. Florida Man says, Tim said he doesn't fear losing everything, but you have created so many meaningful connections that even if you lost everything, you would have a social safety net. I think that means you've made it. I can certainly understand and respect that, but I would just point out the reason why I'm never really scared of losing everything is because I have witnessed people make $200 a day sleeping, literally going downtown Chicago and going to sleep. And then people just, I remember, I knew this guy woke up in a Folgers can full of cash. And he was like, yeah, I make about $200 a day. And then he bought heroin with it. It was messed up.
But $200 a day.
And
7 days a week.
Well, I don't think he sleeps, but he would just sleep. It's the craziest thing. So he would do whatever his thing was. Then he would go to bed at like 9 a.m. on the corner of somewhere in downtown Chicago. And then he'd wake up after a few hours with a can just full of money.
That's almost $5,200 a month.
That's a lot of money.
Well, I don't know if he's doing it 7 days a week, but yeah, he said, so when I saw him, he had 184 something in a Folgers can, just full of change and bills, and he walked into the bank and he poured it into their sorting machine, and then he deposited it. And he was like, yeah. And then I was like, man, you're making a lot of money. He goes, yeah, but I do a lot of heroin, so like,
yeah.
And I was like, dude, that sucks.
Yep. Yeah.
And that's why he's sleeping outside, because but I was like, have you thought about getting clean and getting a job? And he's like, I make too much money. So my point with that is I have seen American, you know, compassion, and it is there is copious amounts of it. People will just give you money. I tell people all the time, you stand on a street corner and say the word cheeseburger and nothing else.
Yep.
Eventually someone will either hand you cash or a cheeseburger. I'm not even kidding. Like someone will walk into McDonald's and grab one and walk out and be like, here you go, buddy. Cause it's a dollar or two, right?
Yeah.
Because people in America really are, they're really nice, at least in the real world. The people in America on Twitter just want to emotionally destroy you for some reason. I don't know why.
My aunt that I grew up, who's like a second mother to me, every time she sees somebody who even looks remotely homeless, she looks for cash in her car and she gives it to them.
I usually give them high five, like shake their hand, and they're so much happier than when I hand them money. Like eye contact,
it's
and
weird.
Like, I love you, man.
Weird how that works. I'm one of those, I give a lot, like, I would rather give money to somebody on the corner, because if you were going to give to charity, you have to do your due diligence, you have to look at how much of this is actually going to the cause in question, how much of it is going to administrative fees and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I'm much more likely to just want to give it to the guy who's like, this guy's out on the corner. We go to a Walmart over here all the time, and there's this one place where there's always people there. And if I have it, I will give it to them because, like, at least I know that it's going to this person and whatever he chooses to spend that on, not my choice, but I make that choice for that the transactional nature of that relationship, and I'm okay with that, at least as far as that form of charity.
I'm wary of giving cash to random people holding signs because I knew people growing up. It's called flying signs. And so they would be like, hey, did you want to go fly signs? And it's like literally people with apartments.
Oh, it's like a scam?
Yeah.
I guess you'd call it a scam.
It's like a job, just not a...
They call it flying signs.
Not an honest
job.
Wow.
You know the most powerful sign I've ever seen in my life was? I've seen a lot of signs.
What?
So first, let me just give you some backstory. You've seen the signs where like a guy says, let's be honest, I'm going to buy beer. Yeah. And the idea is to be funny. And then it's like, it's relatable. Some people will do the normal signs like, you know, I'm homeless and I'm working really hard and I could use support. I saw one guy in Chicago with his head down. And his sign said, I have nothing, please understand. Mm. And I almost started crying when I saw that sign,
that's
dude.
Yeah.
Cause he didn't ask me for anything. So I was like, I'm gonna give this guy whatever I can.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll give to people, you know, but when I do give to somebody who's just flying a sign, I'll be like, the money I'm giving you is for you to do whatever you want with. Have a good day, man. Like, it's literally the idea is you might just take the cash because you make a lot of money doing this. You're not homeless. I don't care, whatever. But I much prefer to just do massive tips at restaurants.
Yeah.
Because then you've got someone, they're working a job, probably not the greatest job in the world. You got to deal with crappy customers.
Yeah.
I always like, in whatever capacity I can, just do a massive tip because then it's like you're being rewarded for the work you're doing right now.
Yeah, that was a good day. A lesson I learned from my mom. If I didn't have a job, she wouldn't help me out financially at all. But if I got a job, she'd be like, okay, I'll help you out with your rent if you can't afford it, if you have a job.
Yeah. That's worthwhile.
My dad told me that what he would do is, like, he would go out and he'd see people with Vietnam veteran signs, like, I'm a Vietnam vet, and he would quiz them on, like, what rifle did you carry? Because he wouldn't give it to them unless he knew they for sure served in Vietnam. I thought that was very, very clever of him to at least keep them honest in that way.
The hardest thing, I think, for us to decide going forward as a society is what to do with the least amongst us. What's reasonable to do? And it's not an easy, it's not going to be an easy solution. And anybody who says that they have some fail safe solution at how to approach that, they're just kind of being dishonest. You know, it's a hard one. Cause especially if I know how close I was, and your people are hitting the chat and I appreciate their compliments, but they also got to realize that I'm a testament. I was this close. I could have easily been dead or overdosed or in the gutter from being addicted to benzos. And I got them prescribed by a doctor. So imagine how many people are coming by this circumstance in ways that aren't malicious or, you know.
You know what else I want to mention?
Lack of character.
Oxycodone.
But what about the other direction? I want people to hear this. You told a story about how you stood up for what you believed in and you refused to back down. You could have been a superstar, but you decided that there were certain things that were more important. So now you're still fighting, you're still eating, you're fighting now, literally fighting.
Literally, yeah.
But you're doing your thing, you're always doing. You know what I mean? There are a lot of people that I'm willing to bet a lot of people told you to shut up and dribble.
Oh, the entire liberal establishment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's the ironic part.
Yep.
From root to branch, the entire liberal establishment said, "You're too smart for your own good. If you just play, you'll have more leverage to get them to do what they should do." I just gave them the finger and said, you know, let's play the long game. Let's play the long game in my life, and let's play it in the eternal and see who wins.
I think you're doing well, man.
Did you have a moment, like a flexing moment where your mental health, like, just something changed?
Yeah, it was telling the truth and having gratitude.
You found the right path.
But it started early, right? The only snag I had in there is that I was still tied to my material dreams and that I thought I could salvage something with the NBA and have that career. But I got to a point where I realized that we are antithetical. Our energy, I don't say energy in a fake woke way. I mean, like, the momentum of where we're headed is antithetical. But the real turning point for me was a 14-year-old, when I first started talking about anxiety in the public square, when this whole NBA thing broke out. A 14-year-old girl who I thought said she was a 14-year-old girl out of New Jersey, sent me a message on Twitter and said that she was a cutter, that she had cut herself, and that me talking about mental health in the public square gave her hope. And I took that to a conversation with David Stern, and said, these are the people that you are obligated to. These are the people that you're obligated to spearhead this movement for and be honest. And he scoffed at it. And from there, we were mortal enemies. Me as a righteous and divine warrior for God and the Christian faith that I serve, and him as a chameleonic globalist authoritarian elite. And we're at odds. So yeah, the war's on.
Right on, man. All right, everybody. If you haven't already, smash that like button, subscribe to the channel, share the show with your friends. That's the most powerful way to help, because if everybody shared the show, we'd be bigger than CNN overnight. Truth be told, I think in many ways we are bigger than them, but they have a massive YouTube channel. So let's get out there, and if you guys want to support us, that grassroots marketing is powerfully effective. You can follow the show at TimCastIRL. You can follow me at TimCast. Royce, do you want to shout anything out?
RoyceWhite.us. That's our campaign website. You can also follow me on Getter and Substack. I appreciate it, man. Thanks for having me on. Godspeed.
Absolutely.
Yeah, thank you.
Guys, you can follow me at Brett Dasovic on Instagram, but also Pop Culture Crisis on YouTube. If you go to the YouTube channel, we cut up all the segments into videos. I didn't have as much to say tonight, but I promise I have a great amount to say on just about everything we talk about there, probably more than most people would expect. And then if you do that, in the description box of any of those YouTube videos, takes you to the Spotify playlist that has all the episodes start to finish. It's the best way to watch the show, Me Miracle, and we're going to have some more changes and some different things coming with the show in the near future.
Sweet.
I wanted to make sure you're on Twitter too.
Twitter, but
Highway_30. That's what I tweeted out. I want to make sure it's you.
It's a graveyard,
dude.
Maybe you guys got more juice than me. I've been shadow banned for years on Twitter.
Lit up tonight.
Thank you.
Hey, Brett, good to see you again, man. Royce, amazing to meet you.
Thank you, brother. Thank you, guys. I can't tell. Look, the establishment told me face to face, If you don't do what we say, there's no chance that you'll have a voice and you'll be able to help people. And you guys doing stuff like this and giving me a platform allows me to do what I want to do and proves them wrong. So thank you. I really appreciate it,
yeah. My brother. I will see you guys next Wednesday. I'll be out of town on a little adventure, and I'll let you know how that goes.
Alrighty. Yes, thank you very much for coming tonight, Royce. I hope that more people will follow you and learn more about you, your fighting career, your basketball playing career, and that Guardian article that came out that was actually pretty good about you. I recommend people go check that out for sure. Get a little background on Royce. You guys may follow me on Twitter and minds.com at Sour Patch Lids.
We will see all of you guys. Well, actually, you can go right now to youtube.com/chickencity if you want to see some sleeping chickens and a bunch of new babies just hatched. And we have the vlog going. The vlog is back up at youtube.com/castcastle. So check that out. And other than that, we'll see you all on Monday. Thanks for hanging out.
Bye, guys.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash. Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18+. Terms and conditions apply.